Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show with Terry Hines. Stay tuned.
Hi, everybody. This is Queen Tree, and I'm shouting out the Hair Radio Show with Terry Hines.
I'm Crystal Jones Vaughn of Aswaves Hair and Body, and I love the Hair Radio Show.
Hello, everybody. I'm Valerie from Validate Your Beauty. I am giving a shout out to the Hair Radio Morning Show, Carrie Hines.
Time to rise and shine with the Hair Radio Morning Show with Carrie Hines.
Welcome to the Hair Radio Show on Blog Talk Radio. He's the host with the most, Mr. Carrie Hines.
Good morning, and welcome to an all-new live edition of the Hair Radio Morning Show. We're the longest-running daily live broadcast on hair in the world, 25 years and counting. Now, on today's broadcast, we've got the latest in hair and beauty talk, great music, and much, much more. I must thank Carapy Hair Brand, Hair Nation Expo Events, the Salon TV Network, and all of our amazing advertisers who are responsible for getting this episode on the air. Now, if today is your first day tuning in, thank you. And remember to press 1 to make a live comment or ask a question. We're live each weekday from 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Eastern, 5 to 8 Central. Now grab your cup of coffee and enjoy today's show.
I need you back.
Hi, I'm Carrie Hines, and I've been in the hair and beauty industry for 25 years. It's my pleasure and honor to introduce you to Carapi Shampoo and Carapi Conditioner, two unique all-natural hair products from Carrie Hines Hair Care, especially formulated to remedy any type of hair issue. And the biggest benefit of all is that Carapi Shampoo and Carapi Conditioner grows hair. Carrie Hines Hair Care is the very first African-American-based company to infuse hair care products with caffeine. Why caffeine? Well, many of you are aware that stimulating the scalp is truly what causes the hair follicles to awaken. We were most interested in developing a proprietary formula that works on all hair types, whether you have a relaxer or are a naturalista, and not wash away or strip the hair following a color treatment. We're thrilled at the amazing following of Carapi, and we thank you. Please register at Carapi.com and join our Carapi community at HairRadio.com. Again, I'm Carrie Hines. Thank you.
But radio commercials as much as they do television commercials?
Maybe more so.
How do you figure that?
Well, on television, your tube goes minutes just before the commercial comes on.
Yeah?
That serves as a warning device to millions of people that they have a split second to get out of the room.
I never thought of that.
In radio, an advertiser can just sort of sneak up on you without any warning.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you haven't noticed your car radio suddenly fading to black before the commercial, have you?
And not recently, no. But can't you still walk out when the radio commercial comes on?
Not at 60 miles an hour.
Hmm. Okay, but do you think you can really make me pay attention to a radio commercial?
I just did.
It's time to rise and shine with the Hair Radio Morning Show with Carrie Hines.
All right, we're back live. You're listening to an all-new edition of the Hair Radio Morning Show, and it is my honor to welcome you. Now, on this broadcast, called Then and Now, we actually take a listen, playing back some of our classic interviews featuring some amazing folks. And today is no exception in this version, I'm sorry, in this edition, we've got the one and only Mr. Timotheus Smart. Now, you guys know him. He has been on our broadcast first about 5 years ago, in which he always brought us the latest in makeup and hair and all of that wonderful good stuff and beauty, I should say. That was his specialty, as it is now. Well, we catch up to him 5 years later to see what's ever become of him. So on this wonderful edition of Then and Now, we play not just one then interview, we play two back then interviews, and then we catch up with him in the present day. So please grab your cup of coffee and take a listen to our amazing Then and Now presentation with the classic interview. Again, three interviews, all featuring Mr. Timotheus Smart. Two classics and one from now. Stay with us. We've got a lot of the Hair Radio Morning Show to go this morning. Stay with us. You're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. Now I have another very special guest with me today. His name is Timotheus Smart. Now he is a makeup artist, a runway trainer, a producer, and so much more. It's my very big pleasure just to welcome Mr. Timotheus Smart to the Hair Radio Morning Show. And we'll get into all of that. Timotheus, welcome to Hair Radio.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so grateful to be here.
Well, it's my pleasure. Now, I want to kind of get into a little bit of everything, and you're doing some amazing work out there, starting with this wonderful awards presentation, and I want you to tell the folks out there a little bit about that. Why don't we start there?
Okay, so it's called the Living Dolls Project, a fashion and awards show. This is something that I came up with about 2 years ago. This year, April 11th, which is the annual show, is my second one. And it all started because I was looking for a doll for my goddaughter. And my goddaughter, who is African-American, and I was looking for a specific Barbie that looked like her. And I couldn't find it. And it seemed like everywhere I tried to look for it, it was like almost like a foreign thing, which I thought was weird because if my money is good as the next person, and why don't I have a doll that reflects what my goddaughter looks like? So that was something that infuriated me. And I feel like both people that are what you quote-unquote call loudmouth, those are the ones that make the difference. Like, people would call Malcolm X a loudmouth. They would call Reverend Al a loudmouth. They would call Martin Luther King a loudmouth. But those are the people that make the changes. So I felt like I needed to make a statement in having a show that showed inner city kids that whatever you want to be, whether it's a Barbie that's a doctor, a Barbie that's a veterinarian, a Barbie that's a supermodel, you can be all of those things. And I'm going to put you in the right environment with the right people to make all of those things happen for you. And it has been nothing but a blessing since the inception of this. And I am just so grateful to, you know, have this opportunity to work with so many people, people from far and near, from my hometown of Jersey City all the way out to Atlanta, Georgia, where we have models come from for rehearsing. And it's just an amazing program. And we have this show on April 11th this year in my hometown of Jersey City, New Jersey. And it's very... I don't want to say boot camp because I think that's the wrong word, but I am a very disciplinarian type of teacher because I don't believe that, you know, everything comes very easy to people. I think you have to work for it, and you need to work hard for it. And I don't think you can truly appreciate a penthouse until you've lived in a basement. So for me, I truly love to work hard, and I love to make people work hard because you may not like me in the process of it happening, but when you see the end result, you'll truly appreciate everything that I've put into and that I've worked for to make it happen for you. And that's what the Living Dolls Project is all about.
Wow. Well, it sounds quite interesting. Now, listen, I want to kind of go back a little bit. Let's start at the beginning. Now, you're in New Jersey, Jersey City. That's where you're from?
Yeah, that's my hometown.
Wow. Okay. Now, speaking about Jersey City and New Jersey and the East Coast, And you're I mean, the first thing you are, I think, most known for, of course, is makeup and being a runway trainer. And you're putting together shows and all of that. So is there, like, a different style, like being from the Northeast as opposed to being, say, from the Midwest and some of the other places you may have traveled to? Does that apply in makeup, like fashion, where you may, you know, depending upon the region that you're in, may be a little different than maybe in the South or somewhere else?
No, I think it's a universal language. I don't think that it's something that changes because of where you are.
Mm-hmm.
I do believe that there are some places that kind of, you know, take it a little bit further. I would say if you were to go, say, to...
like Europe, maybe, or somewhere.
Oh, my God. If you go to, say, for instance, California... The tanner is crazy over there because the young ladies, they love to look more bronze and they love to look golden. Where if you were to go to more European countries, you know, they like for their skin to look a little more paled out, a little more fair.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it does change up, but I believe that makeup is such a universal language that we all speak. We might speak it a little different, but it's such a common thread throughout of us all because we all want to feel good when we walk outside. And, you know, we love Beyonce and we love I Woke Up Like This, but, you know, that ain't always true. So, you know, makeup is always a nice little help to, you know, get us up and to really push us out the door. And we are really conscious of the way we face the world every day. So just to have a beautiful face, a beautiful lash, a beautiful lip, these are big things and they're huge deals because when you have a person that walks into your establishment where you do makeup at, they come to you with such concerns. Maybe it's very dark under eye circles or acne. And they're coming to you basically putting their heart out. And even though you think makeup, you don't think it being that serious. But for these other people, it is that serious. When they have the huge sunglasses on because they're trying to cover up darkness underneath their eyes. Or, you know, they're wearing hoods because, you know, their skin, and they may have some sort of acne problem. These are problems that come with you, which are realistic problems. And they come to you for you to fix them and to help with them. Because these do affect the way they face the world every day. So I take my job very seriously when it comes to makeup. I mean, it's not an easy thing to break into. But once you do, and when people feel the sincerity comes from the words that you're speaking to them. They trust you. And then that's when they open up and it allows you to do what it is that you do to help them look the way that they want you.
Got it. Well, listen, we have a whole lot of information to get to with you because you're doing a lot of different wonderful things. And just by kind of introducing the Hair Radio Show fans who have asked for us to get on and a makeup expert. So I'm so thrilled. And folks, let me just inform you again. If you've just joined us, you're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines, and I have with us Tamesia Smart, who is just doing some extraordinary things out there with, you know, in terms of makeup artistry, and amongst other things, of course. Now, Tamesia, I also want you to kind of walk us through, you know, some of the big makeup questions that are out there, one of which happens to be, like, what's trending now? For women of color, or for just about anybody, what's one of the big, you know, things you're interested in?
The margin right anywhere you go, you see beautiful women like Nara, Iman, Janet Jackson, Beyonce. They all have embraced this dark matte lip, and it's such a classic statement. It is a statement that some people are a little afraid of. However, I do.
Why are they afraid?
Because especially for African American women, there has been such a stigma put on dark lips, which I think is absolutely crazy that you can't wear a dark lip if you're of a deeper skin tone. That's absolutely crazy and absolutely false.
Wow.
You can wear whatever it is that you want to, and as long as you have the confidence to pull it off and to make sure that it fits your skin tone and that it fits your personality, why not?
Wow.
Why not?
So you mean to tell me that there is that, you know, certain psychology or whatever it is that is included in you know, in lipstick and makeup as well? I mean, wow.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Oh, absolutely.
Very interesting. Wow. So that's the dark matte lip you were talking about.
Absolutely. If you were to go to any of like your local retailers, like say for instance, like a MAC Cosmetics, like the color Sin, Diva, Cyber, Rebel, those are all colors that are like heavily requested and that you see all over the red carpets. You just saw tons of that on the Oscars on Sunday and the Golden Globes a few weeks back. So this is a trend, and I don't think it's going away, not even transcending into the springtime. I don't think it's going away at all.
Wow. Well, what are some of the other things that are out there that, you know, is this something that's easy for women to kind of put together this when they do this dark matte lip? Like, in other words, and folks out there, if you know what we're going to do, we're going to set up a wonderful fan page for Tamesia Smart right at hairradio.com. And Tamesia, we're going to include a video of how to apply this dark matte lip. How's that?
So there is actually a beautiful young makeup artist that I follow on YouTube by the name of Johanna Ortega, and she has this video of how to apply a beautiful matte lip. Some quote call it the vamp lip. So the best way to start is with a lip primer because you just want to make sure that the lip texture is kind of smoothed out and you don't have anything that would make it look unappealing. So you would start out with a basic lip primer, then you take a lip liner, a deep lip liner that works with the lip color that you're going to apply. Line your lips very, very cleanly and very sharp. I would say this would probably be the time where you would take your time and not rush and do anything. You definitely want to make sure you get the line very precise. If you want to make your lip appear fuller, you go on the rim or the outside of your lip, natural lip line. But if you want to keep your lip the same shape and size that it is, just stay within your natural lip line. Then you go on top of that with a lipstick, and then make sure you have a lip brush so that you can kind of blend the lipstick in with the lip liner so that there is no separation between the two. And just make sure you carry that lipstick and that lip liner with you throughout the day. So that it doesn't you know, fade on you, and then you're stuck with your natural lip color coming through the lipstick, which might not look that great. So you want to make sure that you keep your products with you so you can touch it up throughout the day. And that's like the easiest, quickest way to achieve that look.
Wow. Well, I have to tell you, thank you so much, Demetrius, for sharing. And we're going to let the folks out there who are tuned in right now, you can send in your questions for Demetrius to Hair Radio. So you, if you're on Facebook or Twitter, you can use the hashtag HairRadio20, HairRadio20, and let us know what your question is or what you think, and we'll be more than happy to get that connected to Demetrius and have him to share with you, you know, what you need to do or what steps it is, or he'll point you in the right direction. Now, tell us about some of the other types of shows that you've done and some of the other wonderful things that you're out there doing, Demetrius.
Well, I started this journey at the age of 8. So this is something that has been in my blood.
The age of 8?
The age of 8. I did my very first fashion show at the age of 8 at my high, at my grammar school here in Jersey City, PS14. And when I got out there and I did my thing and I felt that roar of the audience and the crowd and my parents,
that was it, right?
I was hooked. You couldn't get me off of it. And I'm a strong believer that gifts are yours to give away. It's not for you to hold on to. And I've always felt that even as a kid that I wanted to show people how to do this. And I know that that's kind of opposite to what is on trend because, you know, a lot of people like to get their gifts, keep it to themselves, but they don't like to share it. And I feel like that defeats the purpose of the gift. So I've always believed that I'm the vessel. I'm not the gift. I'm just the person that was given the gift, and this is, I'm just the vessel that it sits inside. And I got so used to, you know, being on the stage. There were things I wanted to do and I wanted to do more of, but I was never blind to the fact that I was still a shorter guy, so I knew that that would be a hindrance for me in some situations when it came to runway. So when I was 25, my mentor, who has since passed, the late, great Angel Claudio, entered me into the John Blassingame International Model of the Year competition. This competition was the launching pad for international models like Deborah Shaw and the first supermodel, full-figured supermodel, Sharon Quinn. So I was stepping into a realm that I was extremely scared to be in, and I didn't know if I necessarily fit in that realm. So I went and I auditioned, and I got in gratefully. But then the big challenge came was to try to win this thing. And I felt like I was a dark horse in this situation.
And now just mainly because you felt that you were not tall enough?
I was tall enough. I wasn't tall enough because I was African-American. I was looking at it from a very young eyes where I was still very green with it. And at the end of the night, when they called out the winner, they called my name. And it changed my life. It absolutely changed my life. I was afforded the opportunity to travel to Paris, which was one of the prizes for winning the show. And I went to Paris, France. And it allowed me to see so many different things. And I went to, while I was out there for a week, I went to the Louvre. And I saw the Statue of David. And I saw the original Mona Lisa. And it changed the way I viewed art. And when I came back to the States, I sat down with my mentor and I told them, whatever I felt there, I need to do here. And I felt that makeup artist thing in me that had been kind of under the radar before. I felt like it really came out once I went to Paris. And when we came back, we set up this game plan to meet up with some friends of his, Coxine Johnson, who was and is my only makeup teacher that I've ever had. He was working with Whitney Houston and Faith Evans and Shirley Caesar at the time. And he took me under his wing, and he taught me everything from A to Z. And that was the launch of what I'm doing now, and it branched off into everything that, you know, has been such a signature for me to this day.
Well, I love the fact that you talk about getting that inspiration in Paris. It just reminds me, I've been to Paris a few times as well, and I absolutely love it. It is the mecca of creativity. And
absolutely.
I seem to, yeah, and I remember where the Louvre was. They used to have down in the subway, they used to have like statues and all kinds of artwork in the at the subway stop. For the,
yes, they do.
Yeah, at Trocadero was this stop on the metro. I still remember. It's been a while. So very, just wonderful, wonderful stuff. And I'm so glad you're able to get that kind of inspiration that you needed to and bring back and push you forward with the things that you're doing and accomplishing. Well, folks, if you have just joined us, you're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines, and we've really been chatting with Timotheus Smart, who is a makeup artist. He's a runway trainer. He produces shows. He's doing so much. And Timotheus, you're still with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, great. Now, you're having a show that we did talk about coming up on April 11th. Saturday, April 11, 2015. I want you to talk a little bit about some of the honorees for this particular event.
Okay. So the five people that I chose for the awards that we're giving out that night are people that, one, have influence and they bring about a change. And they're unsung. I think there's so many people that are pushed to the forefront. But they forget about those people that are behind that are just as talented and just as great. And that's what I wanted to do. If I could rename this award, it would probably be the Unsung Heroes Award. And it's for those people that have that longevity in this business, that have proven themselves, that have resumes just as long and extensive as the next one, but may not be as pushed into the spotlight as others. So my first honoree is Tondo Kafele, who you and I both know, amazing lock master, just an amazing guy, a beautiful spirited stylist that has worked with so many people. And I really feel like this is his time, not just for myself,
absolutely.
But just in life. I feel like this is just his time to really shine. And with the resurgence of everyone cutting all of the processes out of their hair and they're going natural and they're locking, oh, this is truly his time to shine. And I feel like this time is for him to stand in the spotlight that he has rightfully earned. And I love his spirit. And it was the absolute first honoree that I had in my mind when I was even thinking of who were we going to honor this year. He was
wow.
the first one. And then,
well, it sounds like it's his time and yours, but you go ahead. I love it.
Then we have London Jules, who is a celebrity makeup artist, extremely talented, has worked with the likes of SWV and countless other people, published, started from the same way that I did at MAC Cosmetics, and he was actually a manager when I first started at MAC Cosmetics back in 2002 when I was just freelancing for the company. And he has since grown into this amazing, talented artist, highly requested, works with so many hair care brands.
Well, we'll have to get him on the show. Wow.
Oh, I think you should. I mean, I think he is, like, if you see some of the hair ads for tons of the hair extension ads, that's his makeup work on there. And a lot of people don't know that. So he was one of those unsung guys that people didn't really recognize as much as others. So I felt like he needed that, and he deserved that. And then that Kyle Bullock from out of Philly, really good, and I'm talking about a really beautiful spirited guy, a master barberist, amazing colorist. And I met him a few years back on a photo shoot, and we clicked right away, and then I Googled him to find out other things about him, and I'm like, wow, this guy is like the
biggest. Well, Kyle, KB, has been he's been part of our hair radio tour. We did a Road to Healthy Hair workshop tour, and Kyle, KB, you guys out there remember, he's one of the master barbers out there who was doing some amazing work, and we certainly shout out to them. So you've got some great honorees, obviously. So we are really excited and support each and every one of them, and wish you nothing but success. So that's coming up on Saturday, April 11th. How would folks get tickets, or how do they, you know, how does that work so we could get our listeners into this event?
Okay, so for information on tickets and vending and any other questions about the Living Dolls Project, you can always email me directly at beautybytim@yahoo.com. I also have a Facebook page completely dedicated to the Living Dolls Project, and it is just that, The Living Dolls Project. And you can go on there at any time. It's an open group so that you can see all that we're doing. We actually just finished doing a gloves and hat drive where we gave to a couple of women's shelters here in Jersey City. And we actually stood out in Journal Square, like one of those fast-paced areas, transportation areas, and we just gave out hats and gloves to all of these people that were in need, homeless. And we just wanted to be a blessing to people because it's a blessing to be a blessing. And it's just something that we need to do more of. I mean, it's a beautiful thing to get on the runway and to make people's hearts feel good with all this entertainment. But when you leave all of that and you face the real world, there's a lot of people that are in far worse situations than you will ever be. So if I could do something, or if the people that I work with, if we could do something as easy as making sure your head is covered if you're outside, if your hands are warm when you're outside, if we give you a scarf and your neck is warm, I feel like we're doing something. We're making a difference in some way, shape, or form. And if everybody thought like that, we would be living in a very different world.
Atheist, I have to say, you have just said it all on that note. Well, listen, I have to just take a moment to thank you so very much for coming and talking and sharing with us today. I also want to let folks know that we're going to have you back, and we're going to insist that you, you know, make some makeup contributions to this broadcast and keep the folks out there.
I would absolutely love it.
We'd love to have you back. So before we go, did you have any final thoughts or any words of encouragement or inspiration that you'd like to share today?
I just want to say that I come from a very religious family with a mom that is a pastor and my dad who actually pastored too, and he actually passed away a few years ago. They taught me the value of working hard and things not coming to you easy. We lived with rats. We lived with roaches. We lived with all of those things. But my beginning does not determine my end. And I am in a different space in time and in life right now. And whatever your beginning is, it doesn't have to be your end. So I say stick in there and fight the good fight, because if this is your dream and this is what you want to do, never let small circumstances deter you from the bigger picture. And I think that's the best advice I can give anybody in any venue in life.
Well, that's
if you missed any part of our live broadcast of the Hair Radio Morning Show, we've got you covered. This show will replay in its entirety at noon today at www.stormradio247.com, the perfect broadcast partner.
Easy no, no need to go down. Broke that run, that this how we from. Easy no, no need to go down. Easy no, no need to go down. Broke that run, that this how we from.
Just like the eyes are the window to the soul, the scalp is the window to beautiful and luxurious hair. The way to obtain it is with Stimulating Roots. Stimulating Roots will exfoliate and detoxify your scalp, promoting healthy hair growth. Stimulating Roots has a system to detoxify and grow your hair. Their shampoo combines menthol, camphor, and pink grapefruit essential oil to improve blood circulation in the scalp. Their conditioner, that stimulates, moisturizes, and hydrates the hair. The regeneration oil, that contains essential oils that work together to promote hair growth while calming an itchy, dry, and irritated scalp. Open the window to beautiful and luxurious hair. Awaken the senses to your scalp with Stimulating Roots. This is available at StimulatingRoots.com. That's StimulatingRoots, R-U-T-Z.com.
Ladies, do you love a man with a well-groomed and sexy beard? Men, do you suffer from patchiness or irritation and want a fuller beard? Well, let me introduce you to the hottest beard care products on the market. Rugged Evolution features 16 amazing balms, oils, shampoos, and accessories. Our products are sure to meet the demands of all your beard care needs. For more information, go to RuggedEvo.com. That's RuggedEvo.com.
And remember, rugged is the new smooth.
All right, we're back live. You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Kerry Hines. It is my pleasure and honor to have you on this broadcast today. We've been doing something very special. We call it Then and Now, and it's actually where we play or feature a classic interview from a particular guest that might have been taken like 4 or 5 years ago, and we listen to that, and we play it. We try to play it in its entirety, and then we roll ahead to current days and kind of compare notes, if you will. We'll play a new or recent interview with that particular guest, and it's fun, and we get a chance to talk about some of the comments and give new commentary and hear all that wonderful good stuff. Today is really no exception. If you're just tuning in, then you might have missed the earlier classic interview that we featured Mr. Timotheus Smart, and in total we have about 3 interviews with Mr. Timotheus Smart coming up. Is a special countdown interview that he did, and his choices are still, I call, legendary, even on this broadcast. And then following that, we have the all-new interview this year with none other than Mr. Timotheus Smart. So we're going to get that on, and we want to thank you for being with us today. And we've got a whole lot more of the Hair Radio Morning Show to go. So right now, it's the second interview in this series of Mr. Timotheus Smart, which he does the countdown when he came to our show. So we are super, super, super excited to welcome him and play this for you. So sit back again, grab your cup of coffee, and this is the countdown with Mr. Timotheus Smart.
Oh my God, I didn't know that, you know, talking about beauty icons would be such a great thing, and people wanted to hear, like, what did I think, and, you know, so what I did was I said I wanted to do a little spin on it. I wanted to recognize the, not just the beautiful women, but the beautiful men of this world as well, and it took me a while to get this list compiled down to 10 amazing men, and from very diverse backgrounds, from different points in life and in years and careers, and you know, we just wanted to find that quintessential list. And if you don't agree with the list, I have no problem listening to you and you telling me, oh, well, you forgot this one or you forgot that one. But I will say I think I covered it very, very well. I did lots of research on different lists that have been compiled by, like, the likes of Time Magazine and People Magazine and different periodicals that, you know, traveled really, really far back to some of the screen gods of yesteryear and then some of the pioneers in male beauty of today. So the list is very diverse, and I think that you guys are really going to enjoy it. And I think for some of you, it's going to take you back and make you think, and then you're going to say, oh, my God, yeah, he was a beautiful man. So so I think that we are ready to start. Are you guys ready?
Oh, we are.
Yes.
So excited. All right.
So like I said before, this list, it might be a little interesting, but I'm pretty sure you guys will agree. So the very first list of our male beauty icons has been referred to in so many different lights as one of the greatest actors of all time, and his name is Mr. Marlon Brando. Marlon Brando is an American actor, film director, and activist. He is hailed for bringing gripping realism to his roles, and he is widely considered as one of the greatest American actors of all time. He won two Academy Awards. One was for On the Waterfront in 1954, and then, of course, his iconic role in 1972 as The Godfather.
Now, he was also The Streetcar Named Desire, right?
Mm-hmm. But he didn't win an Academy Award for that one,
though. Oh, okay. Wow. And that's his most famous role, I think.
Yeah, and he actually was nominated for 8 Academy Awards. So he's probably nominated for that. He is the most nominated actor of all time. And I'm sure there's a couple of pictures of him, but I need really to get to why that's considered being the most attractive man of all time. So
I can relate to Marlon.
I love photos of him. And I would say that's a title very well earned. The first thing that I kept looking at was this boyish, devilish grin. So I'm pretty sure he was not, I don't think that he was a playboy, but if he was, I think he would have every right to be.
Well, I'll tell you. Do you remember, like, all that I can remember, I certainly knew of him during his life and when I was a little boy, but I remember Marlon Brando as Superman's dad. That's how I remember Marlon Brando. Yeah, he played Superman's dad in the original Superman movie, and he was the father. And we also remember him being a close friend to Michael Jackson. So he got a lot of press. Michael got a lot of press. Michael Jackson was very close to the family.
Mm-hmm.
And so we certainly remember a whole lot about Marlon Brando towards the end of his life. And so just amazing. So I can understand why he is a good choice. It may not be all about so much about exterior beauty, and that's always in the eye of the beholder, but he has led, you know, he had an extraordinary motion picture career, and that was just, you know, so impactful and went way beyond the motion pictures. So good choice.
I think it was a good choice. Yeah, as I was researching some photos of him, I noticed that he did in his younger days have like a very structured, almost model-esque type face. So there was definitely some qualities that would be very eye-catching. And like I said, in researching, I know of Marlon Brando and I knew of his work, but these earlier pictures really grabbed my attention. So I would say he does deserve to be on this list. And one of the features that I noticed about him is that his eyes are actually downturned in the corners, which people consider like a puppy dog eyes. And I read that that was one of the features that, you know, women found really attractive in him was his eyes. And there was a quote from an actress, so I don't want to say her name, that said that he had the type of eyes that would make you do anything that he wanted. And so I'm going to go have surgery so I can have those type of eyes too.
we think you already have great eyes. You don't need to do that, right?
Well,
yeah,
we'll think about that. But I'm so glad to add Mr. Marlon Brando to this list. And let's go to the next movie actor to grace this list is the iconic forever teenager, Mr. James Dean. James Dean is an American actor, and he is most known for his role in Rebel Without a Cause. In which he was this rebellious teenager. And now, looking at photos of him, I just saw if he was to be in this day and age, he would completely be a model because his face, he just had that structure that he had very full lips as well and almost pouty lips. And like I said, those features were so distinct and very good hair, too. I noticed that a lot. He had very good hair, and actually, he was what I would consider the Brad Pitt of those days. When I saw these pictures of him, because he did die at a very young age, so he is basically forever immortalized as being young, and he just had this beauty about him that was so striking, and even intimidating, because
sometimes
you have to step back and say, wow. Even if you're secure in who you are, you have to say, well, maybe I need to step my game up the way this brother looks. And
he was such an extraordinary, even his acting ability and what he, the way he appeared on screen kind of channeled certain angst in his portrayals and depictions of the characters he played. He was someone who, like you mentioned, he died way before his time, and I think he co-starred with Elizabeth Taylor, and I've seen a movie or two of his. There were so many rumors and so many different things. I think that when he passed away, when he died, I think that all of that just takes on a whole new level of interest in folks. And out in Hollywood, they have nothing but these wonderful, iconic folks that you are talking about, like James Dean, because there's such a mysterious mystery that an aura of mystery, I should say, that surrounds these folks in death as they have lived. So just great choice. Wow, you really go back. Old Hollywood.
He had great lips also, just like Brando. I like the lips, yes.
Okay, Pearl Walker. Let's make it clear that came from Pearl Walker. All right, Demetrius, good choice.
So I'm going to jump to what some people have considered, and many have considered the first black sex symbol of all time, and he is the legendary Mr. Harry Belafonte. Now, Harry Belafonte is a singer, songwriter, actor, and social activist. If you look at photos of Mr. Belafonte in his youth, you would see such a striking man, hazel green eyes, beautiful skin, amazing teeth, just classic, and so many Hollywood producers were almost afraid to use him in films because they felt like if he was the co-star that he would actually outshine the actual star because he was just that good looking. And even in his later days, still kept that air of the swagger and class. He don't see him much now, but, just this swagger and this class about him that is just so attracting, and it just draws your eyes to him, and you just wind up staring.
Exactly.
I mean, if you look at these, if you do some Google search on photos of him from his earlier days, you would just like, I mean, gorgeous black man. I mean, gorgeous.
Well, Harry Belafonte, as you pointed out, was and has been just on our scene, the entertainment landscape for many years. And like you said, being one of the first male sex symbols for our community, and beyond that, being such a voice for, you know, political, you know, concerns,
mm-hmm.
he's had a long-lasting and indelible mark on our community and the world for that much. But I also know Harry Belafonte, a great family man. We even remember, Pearl Walker, you may remember, he, one of his daughters was even acting under whatever, as well. Just a her name, I want to say Heather, but I'm not sure. So Sherry Belafonte Harper, I think it was. And so he really just put those genes out there, believe me. So good stuff. Just a beautiful person inside and out, obviously. Good choice. Wow, you're going back. You're going back to Mesia Smart.
Well, these first five men that I selected, I consider them classic, and then the last five will be what I consider more new school. And so number four, I don't think would be a surprise to anyone. He is referred to as the king of rock and roll. It is Mr. Elvis Aaron Presley. Elvis Presley he is one of the most significant cultural icons of the 20th century. Like I said, he is often referred to as the king of rock and roll or simply the king. And I would say in his younger days, I can't claim to be an Elvis Presley fan, but I would have to say those moves in some of his younger movies, Mr. Presley would definitely make you a fan. He had these beautiful, piercing brown eyes, this lip snarling curl that he used in lots of his photos, where his top lip kind of did this interesting thing, but it drew your attention in.
Oh,
yes.
The quiver,
exactly.
The famous lip quiver.
Mm-hmm. And he took so many photos like that, but he just had this, I want to say, dreamboat kind of thing about him, and I understood why he had so many women names attached to his. Because he definitely was a playboy in his heydays, and he was an icon that we did lose too soon, because we lost him before he even turned 50 years old. So
that's right.
You know,
well, Elvis had lived an extraordinary life. He was one of the biggest names in rock and roll music in the world, and a lot of what Elvis said, yes, there were a lot of controversial ways that folks in our community looked at Elvis for different things. But I have to say, because it's believed in part that a lot of the music that he did was kind of pulled from, you know, inspired by people of color. And so that was one argument. We heard all kind of rumors swarming around about Elvis, you know, supposedly thinking that folks could just buy shoes and buy tickets. And we've heard so many different things. We don't really know what to believe. But the one thing I can honestly say is that I actually agree with your choice. I think that what Elvis did for entertainment was wonderful. And he broke a whole bunch of barriers, and he inspired an entire movement and generation. And the only person, I think, to exceed Elvis Presley, and we'll talk about that in another segment, but I think there's only been one person to exceed him when it comes to generating money and death in terms of entertainers. So good choice. You know, Elvis also, you know, was a serviceman, so we also want to acknowledge that. And very interesting. Wow, you really have gone back. Each choice
and also,
is amazing.
You know, he's buried at Graceland, which was the mansion where he lived, and it's on Elvis Presley Boulevard, which is also Highway 51.
Now, isn't
and
that
it's
in
about
your town,
a mile
Pearl
and a
Walker?
Half. Yeah, right here. It's, it's a mile and a half up the street from my salon. And actually, I have a neighbor who relocated here from Wisconsin, and she's a big Elvis fan. You all would just be amazed at the following that he still has in 2015. She has a life-size mannequin in a case in her living room with an Elvis costume on it, jewelry, the gold chains that she got from Elvis's jeweler, and it's just an amazing following that he still has. I don't know if you all know it or not, but Graceland is the second most visited home in the United States after the White House. It's just an amazing
mark that he left
on society and
now,
the world.
Graceland
and
is right there where you are. Is that correct, Pearl?
Right up the street from my salon, yes.
Do you see the buses riding past your shop?
Yes, and the tourists, and this is every day. And then we're inundated.
We're going to have you to fess up. How many times have you been to Graceland?
I've never been to Graceland.
You have, Pearl. Don't
we
even
talk about it. I'm going to go.
Okay, because we think you've been there a few times, Pearl. We think you've been there a few times.
But there's an area around the mansion, and I've visited those other, you know, some of the other tourist spots around the mansion. But I've never been in Graceland. And about Elvis's hair, I have to share this. Elvis was a natural blonde to me, Theus, but he dyed his hair black.
Really? I've never even heard of anybody doing that.
He was a natural blonde. He was in the movie Love Me Tender. He was blonde in that movie.
Oh. Then that was his own hair?
That was his own hair.
We'll have to check that out. Wow. And that's a great song. Who can forget Love Me Tender? Well, listen, folks, if you have just joined us, you, of course, are listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show.
Hi, everybody. This is Queen Tree, and I'm shouting out the Hair Radio Show with Terry Hunt.
Crystal Jones Vaughn of Assuage Hair and Body, and I love the Hair Radio Show.
Hello, everybody. I'm Valerie from Validate Your Beauty. I am giving a shout-out to the Hair Radio Morning Show, Carrie Hines.
You're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show with Carrie Hines. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. And I have a very special guest with us today. His name is Dr. Joel Freeman. Now, he is the founder, CEO, and president of the Freeman Institute. Dr. Freeman, I'd like to welcome you to the Hair Radio Morning Show.
Well, it's my pleasure to be with you, Carrie.
Absolutely. Now, first of all, we've got to start at the beginning. Tell everyone what the Freeman Institute is.
It's a company I started back about 21, 22 years ago, and we have eight arenas of expertise, and that ranges from workshops and retreats and keynote addresses to culture change, reality-based organizational change, and then I do executive success coaching. I do Black History and Diversity Day presentations, and I have a whole aspect that deals with entrepreneurship and business intelligence and creativity, and then do open registration seminar events for communities, and then also develop the Rosetta Stone Replica Project. The Rosetta Stone is not the language software company. It's the actual artifact that was used to crack the code to hieroglyphics back in the early 1800s, and the original is in the British Museum. It was made in in Egypt on the west bank of the Nile. They found it in 1799. French soldiers did. But anyway, I have the world's first and only full-size three-dimensional replica that's available for the general public. And also have my own publishing company and other projects we work with. So that kind of gives you pretty much a quick overview of the Institute.
Sure. And tell the folks out there, where is the Institute located? And we'll take it from there in terms of what it's all about.
Sure. It's in Maryland, not far from Annapolis, Maryland.
Okay. And so I want to just let everybody know, as you were kind enough to just kind of give us a quick overview of the Freeman Institute, but when I looked at your website at freemaninstitute.com, I saw quite a bit of information, so many different things that really kind of piqued my interest, and I was just blown away, to be quite frank with you, Dr. Freeman. One of the things that we'll get into, there's so many different aspects, like I said, that we're going to get into, but one of my favorite parts that I uncovered on your site, of course, like some of the, you know, on a lighter side, some of the quotes that you have there are just fantastic. And so, you know, I just wanted to let you know that I'm someone who gravitates towards quotes and things of that nature. So when I saw and I look at your kind of your long list of items that you have on your site, and I see that you cover kind of everything, you really do. And you outline it there, you put it there. It's a lot of work that has gone into this. You have some wonderful things that you're doing, obviously, in the way of education. And you have, you know, just some great things historical content, reference. And then my other part, of this that I absolutely love is that you have a huge collection, so of artifacts and things that you know, that document the African American experience, or the African experience, I guess, it if you were on some level. So, you know, we want you to walk us through just about everything. So, and then I'm going to end with the entrepreneurship, because that's another part of this that fits into a great deal of where we are today at the Hair Radio Morning Show and what we talk about quite often. So I've got a whole thing on that to kind of cover with you. So let's talk about this particular, before we even get into Annie Malone, which we will definitely get into, let's talk about I think I saw something that you had written, a documentary, if you will, on a white man's journey into or through black America, I think it was. Why don't you tell the folks about this and how all this came to be, why this came to be, and how you got involved? Because I understand that you're from Canada, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay.
Yeah, I left it up leaving home when I was 17. I come from a little town of Three Hills, Alberta, Canada, and I left home at 17, just started hitchhiking all around North America, long-haired hippie, dope-smoking fool, and just traveled probably 5,000-6,000 miles on my thumb, pretty much all around North America. And then I had an experience that actually changed my life. That really caused me to revisit, you know, what my purpose was and what my goals were. I signed up for Bible school the next day, and
old were you, if I may ask, at that point?
I was,
if you don't mind.
I was actually about 17.
Really?
I was 19 years of age. I'm sorry, 19 at that
point. Wow. Okay.
And then I ended up going to school. I became a pastor. I became chaplain for the Bullets, the Wizards, and the NBA.
Wow.
One of the first chaplains in the history of the NBA. And I started that in 1978-79 season. And
what are the chaplain, for those of us who don't know? Obviously, we know what a chaplain does in general, but what did chaplain for the NBA do exactly? Like, how does all that work?
Well, I'm actually writing a book about it right now called Finding the Open Man, subtitled The Surprising Benefits of Unselfishness. And basically, the whole idea behind being a chaplain is to be a confidant, a friend, someone without any hidden agenda, someone who keeps everything in absolute confidence and is just there for the guys, is not there to take but to give. And it's such a rare situation for so many NBA players, because most people have a hidden and sometimes not so hidden agenda. And so sometimes they don't even know for a year to 2 years what their real agenda is for some people that want to get close to them, either through their kids,
wow,
their wife or family, parents. They try to get through to the player. And so I didn't know what to do. I didn't know how to do it. And so I just knew I could love these guys unconditionally, and I could be a listening ear. I didn't always have the right thing to say, perhaps, but I could at least listen. And I think that over 20 seasons, I mean, there are 6 coaching changes, and generally speaking, a new coach brings in his or her new people, you know, depending on the WNBA or NBA or whatever. They just clear the deck and start with their own people. And to have survived 6 coaching changes, I still shake my head. It's remarkable to me that that even happened. But it was a great ride. Got to know a lot of players and their families, and that, in a nutshell, is what it's all about.
So you probably I also understand that you used to get a lot of questions from these guys, and that's kind of what also helped to prompt you and kind of push you forward with getting to have a deeper understanding. So what kind of questions did they pepper you with?
Well, what happened is of course, you can imagine, when I was 25 years of age when this happened, and my first season, and I've always looked rather young, and you can imagine I probably looked about 16 or 17 years of age when I was 25. And so they're looking at each other and saying, "You mean we're supposed to spill our guts to that guy? You got to be kidding me." And so it was earning their respect. But I think that they were testing the seams of my soul and trying to, and the sincerity of my heart, by asking questions. And it's probably unconscious. I don't think it was a conscious grilling or anything like that. But over time, they began to ask questions like, you know, what did Jesus look like? What part did people of African descent have to play in biblical and extra-biblical history? Just questions like that I found that I did not have the responses to. Heck, I didn't even know what questions to ask. And so what happened is that little by little, it forced me to start researching so that I could have some type of a credible response to them. Then you fast forward. That was my first inkling, real inkling, that I needed to grow and expand. I never was interested in history in school, but that got me started. Then you fast forward to about 1995, I met a gentleman by the name of Don Griffin. He was the senior HR manager for a company, and by that time in 93, I had stopped pastoring and decided to take my pastor's heart into the business world, so I launched my own company called the Freeman Institute. And at that point, I was at his job, you know, working, doing some events for his senior leadership team. And between sessions, Don began to share with me his journey as an African-American male growing up, and some of the latest revelations and understandings he had about himself, about history, and it fascinated me. So I began to study some of the things that he was saying, began to research. I had that much respect for him. And I remember going to the library time and time again. There's no internet at the time, and I just would get these what we used to call VHSs or videos.
Right, remember those?
And so I'd bring home a video, let's say a series called "Africa: A Voyage of Discovery" by Basil Davidson. Is a BBC series. A man from Great Britain. And then I'd pick up the Eyes on the Prize, Part 1, Part 2, The Promised Land, about the move from the South to the, especially the Chicagoland area. And I just began to read books, and then I bumped into Ivan Van Sertima. And I remember calling him up. Someone gave me his home phone number. I called him up, and I said, you don't know me, and I barely know you, but I would like to get to know you. And what happened is that he began to share things with me, and then he got my address. The next thing I knew, 3 weeks later, I got a big, huge box of his books that he edited and wrote. And then I called him back and asked him if he would become my historical guide, my main historical guide. And we spent hours on the phone together where I'd read a book, and I'd redline it. I'd ask all kinds of questions, and he let me ask any off-the-wall question that was ricocheting around my little pea brain. It was just a fascinating experience.
Wow.
We had a great time talking. He's passed away now since 2009, and I miss him, you know, on many levels, but especially just hanging out with him on the phone, just talking with him about various things, bouncing ideas around. So that kind of was the genesis to, and then I met a gentleman by the name of Mark Mitchell, who has a huge Black History collection, and Mark and I began to talk, and I just saw the power of his collection. The impact it had is a transcendent quality, transcending race and gender and generation and religion, class. I mean, just fascinating. And so I began to, he became a mentor of mine, and I began to develop my own collection, which is now well over 3,000 pieces. The oldest piece dates back to 1553. I've been able to do exhibits at the United Nations twice. And plus, they've used some of my pieces and information on international exhibit that's going around the world right now. Clinton Presidential Library have done things in conjunction with the White House communication staff. Also, Secret Service, 4 years in a row, FBI. Just fascinating stuff that
Wow.
has emerged as a result of this collection. It's opened up doors. And I find that, especially when I'm speaking about diversity or Black history, it opens up the minds and hearts to receive what I have to share, because when people see 20, 30, 40 pieces of my collection and exhibit before I speak, you know, now they're intrigued. What's this? What's this white guy all about? What's his deal? You know, what's motivating him? And that's the cartoon bubble above everybody's head. And so I'm able to respond best I can to that. In fact, I have a website called whitemansstory.com. That white man's, no apostrophe on the S, man's, but whitemansstory.com. And that's my online response to that question that people have about, you know, what motivated me to get involved.
Well, I also want to talk a little bit more about this amazing collection that everybody is talking about, of course, that you indicated, over 3,000 pieces. I think I saw in your video or somewhere where it even had like the shackles, if you will, for like that some of the slaves may have, you know, worn or what have you, in addition to so many other different things. What are some of the other standout items that are included in the collection? And I understand that it is online to some degree.
Yes, blackhistorycollection.com. Gives kind of a brief overview of some of the pieces, but it's blackhistorycollection.com, singular. And, you know, that one pair of shackles that I received, I was over in Ghana, the Slave Coast Castle, and I was talking with a gentleman there. His name was Stephen Donica. And I began to share with him a little bit about, you know, the film that I had co-created with Don Griffin and the book and some other things in my collection. And then I said, how would it be possible for me to get a pair of shackles, a set of shackles from here, from Africa? And he says, I don't know, but I'll find out. And he brought everything before the village elders there, and they voted unanimously to donate a set to me, which he sent to me, and I just blown away that they were that kind, and because I'm sure it's not an unlimited number of shekels they have available, and for them to do that, I'm just I just feel so respected by these the individuals who voted on this, and of course also Steve and Danica. And so the other pieces, what I've tried to do, Harry, is to develop kind of a more of a global picture, because I find that here in America and in some parts of Canada also, there's this intractable black-white situation where it's very hard to understand, to cross that no man's land, or so to speak, between the two races. And so I tried to bring more of an international view, and because I really think that once people begin to realize that there were things going on in South America. In fact, there's well over 3 million that right now that speak Spanish and Portuguese, people of African descent in South Africa, and many people can't imagine that and cannot understand it. But it just is. I have documents going back to 1553 from Peru, from Ecuador, from Argentina. Some of them are written in Old Spanish, so that even if someone knows Spanish today, they cannot even read these other documents. You have to have a specialized understanding about the Old Spanish script. And these are all slave documents. I've got an 11-page document from a hospital where slaves were, if they got sick, that's where they went, St. Bartholomew, just outside of Lima, Peru. And it's just an astonishing thing. And then also what I've tried to do with the collection is I tried not to spend so much time documenting the horrific nature of the slave trade and all the rest of it, even though that's a part of the picture and is a necessary part of the picture. What I've tried to do is to showcase the inventiveness of it and the creativity of people who have been under the boot of slavery and the trade, and you know.
And what have you found,
Jim Crow
for the most
laws.
Part? Right.
Well, what I've discovered is I developed a metaphor that is not new, but I've applied it to this situation. It's called Blades of Grass in a Concrete Jungle. I commissioned a 90-second animated video that people can see on YouTube. Blades of Grass in a Concrete Jungle, and it. What it basically is the concrete is a metaphor for all the horrific things that have happened, ranging from lynching, the black code laws, and just the depression where blacks were hired last and fired first, and just so many issues that it's impossible to exaggerate the horrific nature what people endured. But then we talk about the blades of grass who came up through, cracked through, and sometimes exploded through the concrete. So the thicker the concrete, the more inspirational the story. So by using this metaphor, it gives permission to talk about the horrific nature without it being a downer, because then, as I mentioned, the thicker the concrete, the more inspirational the story. Once we begin to understand how terrible it was, and then we see the accomplishments of individuals in spite of how terrible it was, my goodness, I say, you know, man, I think I've got problems. You know, I mean, here's an example of somebody who had everything stacked against them, and they still made something of their lives and an inspiration to their families. I mean, we all have concrete internally, stuff like, you know, hey, I'm dumb, I'm stupid, I can't make it, I'm a fraud. You know, if people really knew what I was all about. That's the stuff that echoes in the minds and the hearts of just about every human being, and at one point or another, that can actually rob them of their purpose and their potential.
Right.
And so that we all have that internal concrete. I'm too short, I'm too fat, I'm too skinny, I'm too tall, I'm too this, I'm too that. My ears are too big, my ears are too small, my hair is not enough. You know, all that kind of stuff that gurgles around. But then you add to it the systemic issues in a culture that provide external concrete that actually can become so terrible and so demanding of a person's attention that it can actually cripple them and come rolling over them and just say, well, I guess I'm nothing. I might as well commit suicide. I might as well do something harmful to myself so that I sabotage my own success. But here are people that came up through it in spite of it. And that, to me, is I just shake my head. And every time I see pieces from Annie Malone and Madam C.J. Walker and Frederick Douglass and Toussaint Louverture and other individuals, Marcus Garvey, I mean, the list goes on and on and on of individuals, Pearl Bailey. It just is astonishing to me what these individuals accomplished. And so what I've tried to do is develop a touchstone, if you will. For instance, like Pearl Bailey, I have the actual check that she was paid for her part in Porgy and Bess. And someone, I'm not going to tell you how much it was, because someone might say, how much was that? I'm going to say you have to go to blackhistorycollection.com and do a search for Pearl Bailey, and you'll find out how much she was paid for her part in the movie that came out in the early 50s. And so it just is amazing when you think of what people like her accomplished. I have Ethel Waters, her contract, her book, His Eyes on the Sparrow. It was a smash bestseller. And I have the actual contract signed by her and her co-author, the one who, the ghostwriter, not the ghostwriter, because he was declared that he wrote the book, but co-author with her, Charles Samuels. And then I have other items in here.
Well, Dr. Freeman, was it hard to kind of gather these items? How do you find these items? I mean, is it easier nowadays because of the Internet, I guess I should ask?
It's actually very difficult. If someone were to embark upon a collection like this
if I were to start a collection today, I don't think I would be able to do it.
Be virtually impossible, and I'm not kidding. It is. Wow. I know what's out there and what's not out there, and it is the stuff that you get now, just reproductions, and there's a lot of fakes, and it's very hard. For instance, I have an original letter, handwritten letter by Frederick Douglass. It's almost priceless because where could you find one? You know, someone might say, "Well, I've got everything." No, you don't. You don't have a handwritten letter by Frederick Douglass. You know?
No, that's huge.
Someone like an Oprah or you know, you name the names out there of individuals that would be interested. I mean, if they went out to look for it, they couldn't find some items that I've been able to bring together.
Wow. Well, I have to say, let me just remind everybody and kind of bring everybody up to where we are. If you've just joined us, you're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. Now, today's guest is Dr. Joel Freeman, and he is the founder, CEO, and president of the Freeman Institute in Maryland. And we've been kind of following along and just thoroughly impressed with the amount of information that you have. You are truly a historian in every sense of the word, and an entrepreneur, and you just cover everything, really. I don't think I've seen anybody in a long time like this who I just, we're all blown away with this kind of information, this knowledge, and the willingness that you share, putting it out there, and it's quite remarkable. So I'm going to kind of turn to, I do want to talk a little bit about Annie Malone and some of the other folks that you write about. And I know we kind of glossed over the book a bit that you wrote with the gentleman, Don Griffin, I believe.
Don Griffin, yes.
So I want you to talk about the book specifically. Tell the folks a little bit more. Are we able to get a copy of this book?
Yes, it can be gotten online on Amazon or anywhere else. And or they can contact me after the program or something like that, and I'd be happy to sign a copy for them and send it to them.
Sure.
Right. But
it's called The Return to Glory. I just want to make sure that
yes,
that's clear, Return to Glory.
Subtitled The Powerful Stirring of the Black Man. And the first half is all about the historical content, and that's the half that Don wrote. The second half has to do with the mental, emotional, spiritual roadmap to wholeness. And in that last part, I detail how a person can walk through the grieving process. Because I remember when I was interviewing people for the book, Mm-hmm. Especially because the book is targeting especially young men, ages about 12 to about 27. And while we were researching this, we had people tell us, you're crazy. You know, why would you want to write a book? Because if you want to hide something from young African-American men, you just put it in a book, right? That's what they're telling us.
Oh,
and they said, you're wasting your time.
That.
You got to use more visual, music, whatever, other means and methodologies to reach your target audience. But we kept on going with it, and I'll tell you,
which is a horrible stereotype all in it, you know, unto itself.
It is absolutely,
you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But that was the messaging we were getting from people we were interviewing for the book.
Right.
So anyway, what happened is the second half deals with the mental, emotional, spiritual roadmap. And so what I did is. You can imagine on a suspicion scale from somewhat to extremely suspicious, we're banging on the extremely suspicious end of the scale when I'm interviewing someone, let's say, for the book. And they're saying, you know, why are you writing this book and who are you and what are you all about? And so what I did is I asked a question that changed the tone of every single interview. And brought some of us from some interviews from 45 minutes to sometimes 4, 6, maybe even 8 hours. Some dear friendships emerging. And here's the question that changed the tone of every single interview. Do you remember the moment when you realized that because of the color of your skin, that the rules were somehow different for you? Now, by asking that question, to have a 65-year-old man pause, look out the window, and then look back at me, and then tell me with brilliant clarity what happened when he was 5 or 6 years of age. Knowing remembering the weather, what he was wearing, his mother's response when he told her about it, and just, my goodness, that question changed the tone. Because I began to then see that there was a whole grieving process. After that moment, whether it's 5 or 6 or 7 or 8 or 10 or 12 or 19 or 20 years of age, depending on the situation, to then go from that moment to what Elizabeth Kubler-Ross wrote when she was still alive. She wrote a book about the grieving process. And grieving, we've all lost loved ones or lost a dream, but grieving is all about loss. And so the loss that I began to identify, because my PhD work is in psychology and I think in that direction, and began to see that the loss had to do with, it was the loss of innocence. That all of a sudden a young kid, a young boy, young girl, a young individual, suddenly it's like the scales have been taken off. It's like the blinders have been taken off, and they now can see, wow, they hate me just because of the color of my skin? You got to be kidding me. And then the grieving process, ranging from denial to depression, just all the different aspects that go with the whole grieving process. And in the book, I spend a chapter on each layer, each aspect of the grieving process. And of course, it isn't a neat, nice and tidy while I'm moving from one part to the next, and never to be revisited. But a person could be in whatever acceptance means, you know, because who knows what that means. A person could be in acceptance at 4:30 in the afternoon and be back at square one at 7 o'clock that night and working through the whole process again. So that began to really unlock to me the doorway, the gateway to understanding what humans go through in a situation like this. And it had an astonishing impact on me.
Well, you know something, Dr. Freeman, I have to ask you, and I think this is about as good a time as any. When you see all of the things that are happening in the country in these current times, and you being a person of faith and education and all the above, and what can you say, and how do you explain it? What are your thoughts on it? I'm just curious.
Well, I think that humans are humans wherever we go.
Uh-huh.
In other words, if you're a Korean in Japan, you're going to be experiencing some crazy situations. If you are a, let's say, a gypsy in Hungary or in Sweden, you're going to be experiencing situations that are very, very difficult. And if you're in from one tribal system or another tribal system, warring against another tribal system in Africa, very similar dynamics. Same color of skin in all in these accounts, except Korean and Japanese might have just a variation of the color of skin. But and also in Mexico, if you're darker skin or lighter skin color, the darker skinned individuals deal with incredible discrimination. In Italy, if you're from North Italy versus South Italy. In Great Britain, just the sound of your speech, if you're from Yorkshire or Scotland, and you're talking with someone who's from London, you know, from a certain part of London, there's immediate, the moment the person opens their mouth, there's an immediate class system that emerges. My point being is that for me, I think that wherever we go, there's going to be this kind of situation. And I think it's important for us to understand the history so that we never repeat it, you know, personally. Let me tell you a quick story. I was down at Los Alamos National Laboratory some years back, about 7, 8, maybe 10 years ago now. And I was doing their, speaking at their Martin Luther King event. And I talked about the moment, and I talked about the grieving process. And there was a gentleman there who was very high up at Los Alamos National Laboratory at the time, a man of African descent. He came up to me afterwards and began to share with me his story a little bit. And then after he shared with me his story, he said, you know, he says, when I experienced the moment, when I realized because of the color of my skin that the rules were somehow different for me, he said, it was like a hurricane force wind came against me. And he was no more than about 6, 7 years of age. And he said, in fact, by the way, when you think about a hurricane, it takes about, 75 miles per hour for a wind right. to get a name. And he said that what happened is that I learned as a young man how to lean into the wind. I learned how to have a sense of humor in the midst of the wind. I learned, it was a dark sense of humor, but I had a sense of humor.
Right.
I learned how to be successful in spite of the wind. I learned how to have relationships with people in spite of the wind, but I knew the wind was there. And he says later on, he says, I rose pretty high in the ranks. I got a job in Japan. He said, I went to Japan and got a tour there, and he said, the moment I got off the airplane, he says, wouldn't you know it, the wind stopped. Now, remember what I said about the Korean and Japanese. If you're Korean, the wind is at about 120 miles per hour for you. But as a man of African descent, he said the wind has stopped for him. About 3-4 weeks later, there were a delegation from D.C. came to visit, and he said they met at a restaurant. And he said within the first 5 minutes, he said, at the restaurant, he says, I felt the wind pick up again. It was just crazy and strange. Then he looked at me. He's a no BS kind of guy. He looked at me straight in the eye and as serious as a heart attack. He said, for some reason, I don't feel any wind coming from you. Now, Kerry, I don't know. It just struck me so incredibly hard. What he said to me, and I thought, I got in the car. I mean, we're I had to get to Albuquerque to get on the plane to come back to Baltimore. A couple of times I had to pull over because I was crying so much, because it meant so much to me. And I just, at that point, you know, I began to pray, I began to talk to God. I said, I never want to be a person who sponsors the wind for my wife, for my kids, for my next-door neighbors, people at church, people wherever I go, and be in cross-cultural situations. I don't want to be a sponsor of the wind. And not if, but when I do sponsor the wind, I just want to be man enough to go to that person, whoever it might be, and ask for forgiveness and apologize. And repair as best as I can. Now, I think that is a metaphor, if you will, for how things can change. It's one by one. people reaching out and in spite of the pain. Henry Nouwen wrote a book called The Wounded Healer, and I think that's what it's all about, that in the midst, in spite of our wounds, in spite of the history, that we all seek to understand before seeking to be understood. That's what Augustine said in the 4th century.
Wow.
Seek to understand before seeking to be understood. Those are words worth embroidering. But
I love
what's
that.
Cool about that statement is that it doesn't preclude the need to be understood, but it's all about understanding. And I think if every one of us, within the sound of my voice, myself included, if every one of us over the next 30 days said, I am going to seek to understand before seeking to be understood, with our spouses, with our kids, the next-door neighbors, everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And just, I think it could have a profound impact on our, on the quality of our lives, on our experiences, and the impact on our work experience, everything that we can imagine. So that,
wow.
That's what I think it needs to happen. And so every pore in my, every bone, every tissue in my body, every cell in my body, I want to be committed to that. I want to be committed to impacting other people, like the hot coal principle. The old days, we had the hibachi grill, and you put the briquettes in there, and there's only one or two that are hot, and then you kind of bring the other ones that are cold, you bring them up next to the hot ones, and you hope they catch fire. And
yeah.
So I just think if we can get just some people that are hot coal,
mm-hmm.
briquette coals, and with this message, and little by little, you know, the whole purpose behind the collection. I hold things lightly. You know, that collection, the whole purpose of the collection is to help create an opening in the hearts for people to hear this message. And
wow.
My book, the books I write, you know, everything is all designed to help open up doors and hearts, minds to these kinds of things, to get out of small-mindedness, to kind of move. We can't deny the pain, but it's kind of like a ratchet wrench. You know, a lot of people view the click, 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 you know, the backwards movement.
Right, right.
Just as that, a backwards movement, backwards movement. But actually, when you think about the purpose of the ratchet wrench to loosen a bolt or tighten a bolt, when you do the click, 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 that's an important part of the whole purpose of the ratchet wrench. What's my point? The point is I think sometimes we just need to take a step back, take a look at our pain. Click, 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 and when it's uncomfortable, turn the music off, turn the external stimulation off, and just confront the pain. And we might have to do it in counseling. We might have to do it reading books. We might have to do it in prayer. In a lot of different ways we deal with the pain, but we all have to do that click, 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 and take the step back. But really, that step back is not a backward step. It's a forward step because now we're ready to confront the issues in our lives, to deal with people out of respect, mutual respect. It's not me trying to be black or someone else trying to be white. It's just saying, hey, I'm comfortable in my own skin. I'm not going to diss my own people. I'm not going to tear my own race down. I'm just going to be who I am. And I'm going to allow you to be who you are when you come into that 5-foot zone around me. And so that's what it's all about, I think.
Wow. Well, I think you put it eloquently, I have to say. Let's talk about just turning a little bit over towards the entrepreneurial part of things. And I love how you really, I have to say, I read a little bit closely about some of the items in terms of you helping corporations and helping folks in terms of diversity and all kinds of different things and customer service and just teaching and being there to help guide folks. I was just quite impressed with all of that, Dr. Freeman. So I want to kind of just talk for a moment, and maybe we need to start off by recognizing the impact of an Annie Malone, of C.J. Walker, and then kind of talk about entrepreneurship in just in general terms. And then I have something I want to mention to you, but why don't we start there? Why is it so important? And it seems like all these things are connected when I think about, you know, the Freeman Institute. It seems like all of these things that you do, there is a theme, there is a purpose for all of these different aspects that you tackle. You do a lot and you say a lot, and there's a reason, I believe. But I'd like for you to talk to that a little bit.
you know, about the entrepreneurship and Annie Malone and all of that. Why did you decide to include Annie Malone as part of your wonderful site and information?
Well, Carrie, you are right. There's no more than 2 degrees of separation between any two things that I'm involved with. In fact, what I did is I think it's important for everyone to do this. But I figured every major corporation or organization, faith-based, nonprofit, for-profit, whatever, most every successful organization has a vision statement, mission statement, core values, code of conduct.
Right.
And I figure why not everybody else? Why not individuals develop that? And so what I've done is I developed my own vision statement, my own mission statement, my own core values. And I detail that in the book, the workbook called If Nobody Loves You, Create the Demand. It's a book about entrepreneurship, about taking the idea to the marketplace. It's a book about discerning the difference between a viable business dream and a nightmare as quickly as possible. And it's also developed so that an organization could create an entrepreneur club so that people can learn how to deal with objections and learn how to deal with rejection. Because if people can deal with those two things, especially learning it young in life, they can be successful in whatever they do, objections and rejection. And so I think that when it comes to entrepreneurship, see, one of the things that I want to do is help community-based organizations and faith-based organizations establish galleries, black history galleries in a community. And I think that a gallery can become, in fact, if someone goes to blackhistorygallery.com, blackhistorygallery.com, they can learn more about this model. Because I think the Black History Gallery can become like a town well for a community where people can learn about morals and values and just entrepreneurship and so many different aspects of what it means to return to glory. And so then what happens is that as a person learns about entrepreneurship, in fact, I think especially with, let's say, an organization wanting to mentor youth, you know, if you come at a young person with the whole idea of morals and values, they're going to be gone in a New York second. But if you come at them with the idea of how can we connect now with later, you know, where do you want to be down the road 5-10 years from now? And what are you doing now that will connect with 5-10 years from now? And, you know, if what you're doing now doesn't connect with 5-10 years from now, then we need to revisit what you're doing now. And we can do that in a very positive way and begin to understand that the future is a connection of the eternal now, you know, the moment, these moments that we connect together that become the future. And so I think it's important to bring a group of young people together, let's say, and say let's have an entrepreneur club. And by the way, let's develop an entrepreneurial business together. And I developed a whole magazine project around that that's going crazy around the country right now. And let's develop a project so that you can learn how to deal with objections and rejection. And then you can learn how to shake a hand firmly while you're looking squarely in someone's eyes. You can learn how to dress in a manner that's going to be one less speed bump for someone to go over to get to you as a person. We're going to learn how to just the way we communicate, what we say, how we say it, when we say it, time, tone, tact. We're going to look at all these different aspects. We look at your values, your morals, your character. But you see, all this stuff gets slipped in through the side door. And it's along the way, all this stuff becomes introduced because, you know, if you want to be successful, if you want to make more money, if you want to be a person that has a greater purpose in life and attracts people to you, your counsel is in demand, you have to start looking at these other areas. But if you lead with that foot, the other area foot, it's going to drive them away. But if you lead with the foot, you know, of success and entrepreneurship, because we're all either going to be an employer or an employee. And I prefer to train up employers, people with an entrepreneurial mindset that can end up hiring 100, 1,000, 10,000 people down the road.
Exactly.
And provide jobs for families. And that's the kind of mindset I like to prepare people for, and so that they're almost not content for anything else but that.
Exactly. Well, I love that. I really do. And that makes a lot of sense to me. Speaking of which, I see that you have the video there. I didn't get a chance to discover that before we began to chat today. But I'd like to talk a little bit about the Madam C.J. Walker items that you have. And I believe they're part of your collection. Or tell us a little bit about that and how did you, you know, we'll turn to the hair part of it.
Okay.
How did you get that and talk a little bit about that? And I'm looking at your video, but I don't have the sound up. So, you know, walk me through a little bit of what all of that is about.
Well, Madam C.J. Walker, most everyone has heard of her. And because when I'm in a crowd, let's say 1,000 people, and I ask, how many hear of Madam C.J. Walker? And hands go up everywhere. She's an incredible person. She fought against lynching. She gave money for fighting against lynching to Washington, D.C. to help create legislation against lynching. She was a woman of great character who helped to develop entrepreneurs, women entrepreneurs. And yet the question I generally have in a situation like that is, okay, what well did she draw her water from?
Right.
What shoulders did she stand on to become who she was? And so I bumped into Annie Malone. And hardly in that same crowd of 1,000 people, you might have 99%
two.
Of the folks raising their hand about Annie Malone,
exactly.
About the Madam C.J. Walker, but then you might
right,
have three
no
or four
one.
People
right, exactly.
saying they know who Annie Malone is.
Correct.
So I figured I'm going to make it part of my life mission is to help help people know about who Annie Malone is.
Yes.
Because she
no,
was...
Hold it. Yes, go ahead. Go right ahead. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. She was...
Oh, no. She was an incredible person. She was actually... she trained up over 75,000 women entrepreneurs.
Mm-hmm.
She trained Madam C.J. Walker in 1905, and Madam C.J. Walker became a Poro agent, because that was the name of her college, Poro College. She built this beautiful building in St. Louis, Missouri, four stories high. It looks. I have an original book that people can get off Amazon if they go to porocollege.com. And Poro College, it's just very simple. The word, first word is four letters, Poro, P as in Paul, O as in ocean, R as in Ralph, O as in ocean, Poro, like P-O-R-O, college, .com, and they'll see this building, and then they'll also see a booklet that she published back in 1926. And a part of my Black History collection, yeah, I have an original one of those 1926 booklets. There's very few of them around. And when you open up the booklet, the first thing you start looking at is how incredible this building is. It's like it's straight. If I just showed you a picture of some of the rooms, you would swear it's out of Wall Street, New York. And this particular building was a building where she trained up, as I mentioned, over 75,000 women entrepreneurs who she gave cash awards to for saving accounts or home purchases. She gave a diamond ring to them after 5 years of service. Her philanthropy toward them and toward others was legendary. And this building is just an incredible place that she created for this. She owned a whole city block in Chicago. She paid, imagine this, 1926 alone, she paid over $40,000 in taxes. Just think about that.
Amazing.
One of the first
Amazing.
People in the entire state of Missouri to own a Rolls Royce. And
who was actually the very first self-made female African-American millionaire? Was Annie Malone, or was it, I mean, not that it, you know, is something we should, you know, compare on any level, but I'm just curious because I've always grown up thinking it was Madam C.J. Walker with all of her, you know, things and accomplishment.
Yeah, from all the research I've done, if I were a betting man, and I'm not a gambling man, but if I were, I'd bet the farm that Annie Malone was the first millionaire of African descent, female millionaires in the country.
And that's
just
what
based
I'm getting.
On the timing.
Why? How on this earth? I try to figure this out as well. How did? And I love Madam. I love both and all the things that
they
stand for.
They both are wonderful. Yes.
Absolutely.
And that's not even part of the discussion here.
Right. Exactly. But how on this earth did Madam C.J. Walker take all the things that she learned, which I'm sure was a wonderful tribute to Annie Malone? And seems that only America, it seems like we only remember or know of the accomplishments of the student as opposed to the teacher.
I think a lot of it had to do with Annie Malone. What happened is that she ended up getting married in, I think it was 1924-ish, right around there. And what happened is that after she got married, her husband, he was not a very good man, and he caused such incredible problems for her that I just shake my head, and felt that he was due so much more than and they ended up getting divorced. Let me put it that way.
Wow.
And from that point on, what happened is her business became. She was a very, if you look at her building and everything that she did, it was incredible, impeccable, clean. It was orderly. It was, you could see the record system she had. My point being is that this was an incredible person. But once, after the wedding, then what happened is that he began to sabotage everything. And she never recovered. Then the IRS got involved, and she never recovered from that at all. Here's a college that employed in 1926 175 people with franchise outlets in North America, South America, Africa, the Philippines, a wealthy, wealthy woman. And then at the end of her life, she pretty much dies destitute. And all that's left right now is the orphanage, the Annie Malone Orphanage. That was a facility on Good Avenue. I don't know if you remember the song Johnny Be Good by Chuck Berry.
Yes,
he grew up on Good Avenue, right around the corner. And that's where the spelling Johnny Be Good, G-O-O-D-E, in the song, comes from that Good Avenue.
All this time, I thought it was just Johnny Be Good, G-O-O-D. So
G-O-O-D-E. If you look it up on the Internet, you'll see that's how it's spelled.
Wow.
And he later became a beautician under the Poro system. He graduated in 1952 because he thought the music thing wasn't going to work, and so he became a beautician. And of course, his songs just took off, and he never went back to it. But
right, amazing. So okay, well that explains a great deal for us on that because I was just curious. I'm really sad to understand that she had that kind of a ending. But you know what? I always like to remind folks, and it always seems to me that it's always those who are incredibly talented and creative, and they always attract a certain kind of the opposite, if you will. I don't know. It just seems very strange to me. But anyway,
Some people make great personal choices and bad business choices, and other people make bad business
choices. It's the opposite, exactly.
Good personal choices.
Yeah, that's amazing.
It's crazy.
Exactly. Well, listen, thank you so much. This is great. Folks, if you've just joined us, we have really been kind of getting a great education, a great understanding of so many historical elements and things that we kind of knew a little bit about or we kind of heard about, and some of us have read some things but not others. So we're so excited to have the gentleman behind the Freeman Institute. He is the founder, CEO, and president, Dr. Joel Freeman, and he's with us today.
And this is just, I'm still kind of stuck on the 3,000, more than 3,000 pieces that you have in the Black History Collection. I can't wait to come and see that. So I'm very, very excited.
Thank you so much. I'm very excited
about it, sure. So this is just wonderful. And we're going to tell the folks again, why don't you do that, Dr. Freeman? Tell the folks how they can reach you, how they can find out the items that they really need to focus on some of these. I mean, you have quite a bit of information.
Well, I think if people can go to blackhistorycollection.com, and then at the very bottom of the page is all of my contact information. And so then I'd be very happy to talk with them if they want to order a book, a film version of the book, Return to Glory, the entrepreneurship book, anything at all, or just want to talk maybe about something in there that they have a collection or a few pieces and they're wondering about it. I'd be very happy to talk with people. And so that's probably the best way, blackhistorycollection.com.
We're going to, of course, stay on top of all of this and bring you back, Dr. Freeman. We're going to keep, we've got you now, and there is a whole lot of this that we're going to delve into on a regular basis, because this is something that's so critical and important for us to have a greater understanding about, and I feel so honored and lucky right now. I feel so lucky that I've been able to come across your information. I'm just very grateful. Now, I have to say, before we close out, I had mentioned this at the top of the interview. I love the quotes that you've assembled. I don't know who wrote them, but I just love them. And these are just a couple of them that I just said, oh, wow, how great. Patience is not waiting. It's how you act while you're waiting. So that's one. I love that. And I think that says so much. And my other favorite that I seem to just picked up again from looking at, started at freemaninstitute.com, and I saw this, and it's like age doesn't always bring wisdom. Sometimes age comes alone. I just love that. That says it all. So I want to just say you are just extraordinary. So you are.
People say
you're extraordinary.
I'm an expert in this or that. I'm not an expert. I'm just a student. And so I'll always be a student learning.
Wow.
Like someone once said that you can't learn with your mouth open. It's just more of a situation. You just really want to. I'm always someone that I want to just learn, because generally speaking, you aren't learning much when your lips are moving. And so I want to be a person who listens at least twice as much than I speak.
I
did a lot more speaking today than I
well, that's
than I'd
okay.
like to do.
that's exactly what I was about to say. It's okay when your lips are speaking, when they're educating so many people, countless folks who need to hear what you have to say. So I am so grateful. Now, are you on social media? We need to find out. Are you on social media at all?
I'm on Facebook. I've got about 16 pages. In fact, there's a page called Black History Collection. It's the only one on Facebook. Got over 10,000 followers on that. And got some very, very cool stuff on that. And then, of course,
well, you're
my
about
name,
to have 10,001.
So it's Black History Collection right on the Facebook page. And then,
sure.
Of course, I have my own personal Facebook page, and I'd love to connect with anybody. And then I'm on LinkedIn and Twitter and who knows about me and all
okay.
that kind of stuff that's out there.
So we can find you. Okay. Well,
yeah.
I'm going to have you back, as I said, right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. Well, do you have any closing thoughts? You've been so kind to just share your perspective on all of this, and just someone who has done so much. Do you have any closing thoughts or words of inspiration or encouragement?
Well, I do. I think, speaking of the hair and beauty industry, I just see how Asians have pretty much taken over, and I'm not mad at them. I think they just took advantage of a situation that was open and available. I've developed a 10-year plan on how African Americans can take back the hair care and beauty industry, starting from the top down and the bottom up. And I think Annie Malone figures very much into this. I would love to see this booklet get into every beauty parlor, every beauty salon, every barbershop in the country, and have people learn about Annie Malone. And then I'd like to see the most senior people in the hair care beauty industry from the old guard companies and the new guard companies come together. In the first year, not even deal with business things, just be develop relationship, to take a look at the elephants in the room, to walk through all that, to deal with that, and then have a united, just not a united front necessarily, even though that's important, but united, just be united and to really become good friends and understand how important this is. And then in the second year, start developing manufacturing and then distribution. And little by little, I think that there's a whole willing audience built around Annie Malone's story that could be wide open, because people will not buy black just for the sake of buying black. They want to buy something that is a good price, that's easily available, it is distributed well, is manufactured well, and you just check all the boxes off, and then someone will say, okay, now I'll buy whatever that product is. If it happens to be black, that's what I'm talking about, is to create a whole industry that can, because without the if the consumers are trained and understand what's going on, I think, and then there's a product and manufacturing and distribution all set up in place to deliver it, I think that within 10 years, the whole industry can turn around and it can become something that's well within the African-American community. But I think Annie Malone is the key for all of this.
Well, I just want to remind the folks, and the book that you're talking about, exactly the title and how we can get our hands on
it's
book
Madam,
again.
Madam Walker's Role Model. It can be found on Amazon, eBay, but if they go to, if someone goes to Poro College, P-O-R-O, Paul Ocean, Ralph Ocean, porocollege.com, they can see how to order it. And I think it's such an important piece of history. You know, Carrie, I reached out to the leaders in the hair care beauty industry and only found two or three that even knew who Annie Malone was. And I said,
exactly.
I said, you know, that this is an important thing for people to learn about her so then they can begin to reanimate her legacy.
Well, I'll tell you something. It starts today. Dr. Freeman, I want to thank you again for being our very special guest right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. We're going to have you back to kind of, you know, continue this wonderful conversation. I think it was a great start, and you've helped to peel back just a little bit for us. And we've got some work to do. We've got some work to do, so we're going to have you back. Well, listen, I want to thank you again, and you, please remain on the line, Dr. Freeman. I'm going to close us out here, and we're going to chat. All right, folks, keep it right here. There's a whole lot more of the Hair Radio Morning Show to come. Thanks so much, Dr. Freeman.
Ladies, do you love a man with a well-groomed and sexy beard? Men, do you suffer from patchiness or irritation and want a fuller beard? Well, let me introduce you to the hottest beard care products on the market. Rugged Evolution features 16 amazing balms, oils, shampoos, and accessories. Our products are sure to meet the demands of all your beard care needs. For more information, go to ruggedevo.com. That's ruggedevo.com.
And remember, rugged is the new smooth.
Just like the eyes are the window to the soul, the scalp is the window to beautiful and luxurious hair. The way to obtain it is with Stimulating Roots. Stimulating Roots will exfoliate and detoxify your scalp, promoting healthy hair growth. Stimulating Roots has a system to detoxify and grow your hair. Their shampoo combines menthol, camphor, and pink grapefruit essential oil to improve blood circulation in the scalp. Their conditioner, that stimulates, moisturizes, and hydrates the hair. The regeneration oil, that contains essential oils that work together to promote hair growth while calming an itchy, dry, and irritated scalp. Open the window to beautiful and luxurious hair. Awaken the senses to your scalp with Stimulating Roots. This is available at stimulatingroots.com. That's stimulatingroots, R-U-T-Z.com.
This is Dr. Linda Amerson from Texas, the owner of LA's Hair and Scalp Clinic. I am giving a shout-out to Carrie.
Of College of New Orleans, Louisiana. I just want to give a shout-out to the Hair Radio Show with Carrie Hyde and his new team this morning.
Yay! All right. So in the morning, what do you do each day?
I listen to the Hair Radio Show, baby.
You're listening to the Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines. With me today is a very special guest. You guys know her. She's been with us before. The Hair Radio Morning Show is proud to welcome back CEO of UBC-TV, Ms. Peggy Dotson. Welcome back to the Hair Radio Morning Show.
Thank you very much, Carrie. How are you?
I'm doing great. It is my pleasure to welcome you back in 2020 to this wonderful broadcast and to bring somebody who, you know, we're doing a special right now on women in business and who else besides the legendary Peggy Dotson to talk to about UBC-TV.
Yes. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Now, how can we... What can we tell folks what UBC, for those who may have been under a rock for these last decades or so, but what can you tell us about UBC-TV?
Well, I think I can break it down into one sentence, if I can remember. What UBC is, I guess technically you could say we're an urban broadcasting company. And UBC is a media technology broadcast company that creates original urban lifestyle content, goods, and services that's distributed over multiple platforms globally. That's the basis of what it really is, in a word.
Why is it so important to have something like UBC-TV these days?
Well, I think I know for one reason is our culture. We need to be able to tell our own stories, and those stories need to be told by us. Some years ago, the only people that were telling our stories were not of our race or culture. And as the more the world gets multi-platform, the more culture is important. And we've known for many years that that African Americans, we have over $1 trillion buying power, and that's growing, and that we are the creators of the world, and people follow us. We over-index in video. We over-index. We purchase everything. We over-index in everything, but yet we're the least represented in reference to who we really are, and people have basically painted us as one-dimensional. Although today things are better, I must say that some of my colleagues are working a lot, and some of the studios have opened up more to accepting us to be on screen, whether it's the small screen or the big screen. But there's so much more still to be done, because the problem is controlling the narrative. We still are not controlling the narrative, which means that our stories are not being told, although there are more of us in front of the camera and more of us behind the camera. The stories are still not being told.
Well, Peggy, why do you think they're not being told the way we wish to tell them, even to this day where, as you pointed out, things have gotten a teensy bit better, but why are we still not controlling the narrative?
Well, because the industry is controlled by white males. And it's a well-known fact. I mean, I'm in so many meetings. I meet with, you know, the Googles, the Facebooks, the companies that I'm always around, AT&T's, and I have deals with most of them. But the issues that they also recognize is not that they're recognizing the issue that a lack of diversity. When you don't have people of color at the table, you have the wackiest stuff that comes out. We've seen in some of the commercials that have been on, you know, we're saying, you know, like I think it's, what company was it that had the blackface, Prada? I mean, you created blackface. You know, who was at the table to decide that? And they actually greenlit it.
Absolutely.
And it's unbelievable.
Which makes no sense. Exactly. And I have to jump in because I know exactly what you mean. Here in New York, I watched, we just kind of wrapped in February, you know, it's Black History Month and they show health stories, you know, little on the news, they show a little 5-second clip about, usually it's, you know, kind of textbook black hero type thing. And they'll talk about it for a few seconds. And it's usually where they're totally white anchors talking about it, which is okay, but then I noticed, since I watched the news all the time, that they kept retelling the same clip, showing the same clip over and over. No one bothered to come up with different clips about different black heroes. And I said, wow, they're just trying to capitalize on it and not even making a real contribution to their own broadcast about the contributions of blacks. And history, and this is something, and it just reminds me of what you're saying about having a seat at the table, having a seat at the table. And to me, I think like UBC TV, it's having the whole darn dining room. I think this is the thing that I'd like to see. And as you so eloquently put it, with things that are changing, and they are changing slowly. And we have folks who are looking more and more like us in front of the camera, but and some behind the camera, but it really needs to be on a corporate level, I think. How do you weigh in on that?
Well, yeah, I totally agree with you. It needs to be more on the corporate level. You're right, where there are more people of color on corporate boards, where you have, I mean, for instance, venture capital, women, period. Let's go just say women. There is, what, 0.1% of women own projects are being funded by venture capitalists. And so, you know, the 99.9% of them are male. And, you know, just having more people of color at the table and more women of color at the table in these corporations, and to be able to green light things, to be able to say there are a handful of women out here now that are green lighting, they're getting deals at Netflix and things of that nature, but we're so far behind still. It's like the weight of the world is on a handful of people's shoulders,
Exactly. You would think this is a no-brainer because when we are faced on television. Like, I have so many of these amazing stories to share with you guys today. One that kind of jumps out at me is, you know, the diversity in my own company at Hair Radio LLC. And I have folks who represent the rainbow. We have Caucasian colleagues and associates here. We have African Americans. We have folks who are outside of the country. We have folks over in Ghana who support us and who promote us out there. But one of my favorite times, I had one of my colleagues on who's not an African-American, and I remember showing the flyer for our Big Hair Nation Expo events. We're going to talk about that as well down the road some. But I was showing the flyer where we have these beautiful three ladies who are African American, so it looks on the picture, in different shades. And we do that so everybody can identify. And it's gone over very well in the black community. But the colleague, again, who's not African American, said to me, is it possible we could have, instead of that, maybe, she said it delicately as you could put it, but could we put a Caucasian face on there instead of the three black ladies, I guess. I forget exactly how she worded it because she really tiptoed around that. But she didn't mean any harm. Just in her world, she was never used to looking at so many black images. And so to her, this was like, you know, can you put something, you know, a white person on or whatever the case might be. I forget how she said it. Again, I wish I could remember. I was kind of in consternation. I was taken back for a moment, taken aback at what she had asked me, because I thought to myself, I was very polite, but I said, you know, I wake up every morning. I turn on the TV. I'm bombarded with images of folks who don't look like me. Mm-hmm. All day, every day, night and day, month after month, for year after year, for decade after decade. Yeah, and you can't look at a flyer for 5 seconds with black folks? I really wanted to say that. And she's probably listening to this broadcast right now. Well, you know who you are. But I just crack up at it because I said, you mean to tell me you can't stand to see it but for 5 seconds and I have to live my entire life, you know, looking at images? Not that we are against anybody, but it's just the fact that we're all trying to live together and get along. So the key is to be fair, to be fair. Mm-hmm. And that's what the Hair Radio, and I love the Hair Radio Morning Show because we can point out some of those differences and some of those things, and it's not to the degree where we're trying to alienate or xenophobia or anything like that. We're all here with a similar purpose called life and trying to lead our way and navigate our way through this thing, and that's what I'm here to say. So it cracks me up to that degree.
Yeah, it's just about equality, actually.
Equality.
It's just about equality and being just and being fair and being even and being reflective of the country. You know, even now you have the formula casting doesn't work anymore. They still do it to a degree where you have one black person or one, they don't even, Latino, Asian, very, very, very seldom, even though in the Academy Awards you had the big winner this season was an Asian a film, but very seldom you have, even with the newscasters, you can see the local news. You may have one African-American anchor, or you may have the top anchor may be a white male, that's the way they do it. It's 1 to 3, 1 to 4, or maybe 2. Every now and then you get 2, depending on, I guess, their demographics. But, you know,
well,
right now
I think it also depends on the time of day that you might.
True.
Yeah, there's still some, like you say, I love what you say, there's so much work to be done because I watch a lot of the anchored news locally here in New York City. And what I do notice is that it's exactly what you said, and sometimes it's even worse because you don't even have, there's no representation with a black male anchor lead, or so very rare.
It's rare.
And then, you know what I mean? And then you're not even seeing a real representation of even the African-American experience because what you'll see are folks who are just one complexion. You never see the real rainbow. And you certainly don't see natural hair being reflected. What you see are basically the same cookie-cutter reporter styles, straight hair to the shoulder or something like that. That's all that you see. It's the same old,
same old.
And you can tell, you can absolutely tell that there is nobody black sitting at that table. And even when they talk about black stories and reporting things, you can still tell by the narrative, by what's being reported and the angle and the, you could still tell, you get a chill, like, oh, did they just say that? And that kind
because
of
the
thing.
Editors, because the editors or producers
right.
are not people of color.
That's
and
right.
I've
and
I
we
have
feel
a,
it,
a,
right?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, and if they are some, for instance, I won't bring up any names of networks,
no.
but, and because I have friends that work at them. And but, you know, there
right.
are some, I have one colleague that told me, even with people who are of color, African-American, they use the same people over and over again, which is very boring because you can't create the same opinion and they and it doesn't diversify,
true.
Even to the same black voices, you know, like these are the only people you know. You can't pull somebody else
exactly.
in.
Exactly.
And one of my white colleagues told me, one, and she said, Peggy, I'm apologizing to you. I said, you don't need to apologize to me. You need to apologize to everyone else. But she says, what happens is that sometimes things move so fast, they don't think about bringing anyone else in. They only go to the pot that they know, and they get people that they're familiar with. And it's a very incestuous business.
Exactly.
Because people only, you know, like for instance, you see comedy, sitcoms, and you see Kelsey Grammer. How many shows was he on? I mean, Kelsey Grammer, oh, my God, 10 shows.
Listen,
with Kelsey
I
Grammer
just
in
watched,
it.
Exactly, and it's so funny you say that, not to pick on him, but I just happened to be watching Patricia Heaton's new show on
mm-hmm.
Thursday night, and who pops up at the end? Kelsey Grammer.
There you go.
I say
like
to folks out there
rash.
That what happens is it seems like other communities can kind of fail forward. They can have one show after another that kind of gets shut down or doesn't be or is not a hit, and they keep on going on and on and on. They just get so many additional and extra opportunities where we have to fight and do something amazing just to get half of one. But I love what you said, and let me just tell everybody again, guys. If you've just joined us, you're listening to the all-new Hair Radio Morning Show. I'm Carrie Hines, and my very special guest with us today is Miss Peggy Dodson. Now, you guys know her. She is the CEO of UBC-TV, and we're so excited to welcome you back to the Hair Radio Morning Show. Good morning, Miss Peggy Dodson.
Good morning. I'm here.
Yes, you are. Now, listen, I wanted to jump in. You mentioned something a little while ago about equality, and I thought it was
mm-hmm.
the perfect lead-in to talk about hair equality. I've just launched a new site, hairequality.com, which kind of takes you to our Hair Nation Expo platform, but it talks about the diversity and how important there's something out there that we're going to get into just a tad called the Crown Act. And so hair
mm-hmm.
equality makes everybody part of that conversation, like you said, about seats at the table. That's what this is all about. We want to recognize everybody's hair and not let folks use our hair in the black community to be discriminated against. And I wanted to get your thoughts on hair equality and what you think. You know, we've all, you know, folks, especially natural hair folks, and even those who are not, our hair has been very important to us, and folks have used that to separate us. And what's your take on it?
Well, it's like Samson and Delilah. What happened with Samson?
Mm.
He cut his hair and he lost his powers.
Mm.
So hair to us is part of our cultural expression, and it's part of our power, and it's
yes.
part of who we are. And, you know, having to – I had a friend who has locks, and he had to cut his locks. He got a new job. He said, I'll cut my hair because they don't – you know, like, have to cut my locks. They don't want that. And it's just a way of making people lose their identity and fit into something that has no soul, no creativity, no nothing. And when you fall for that, into that – no soul, no nothing, you are then dictated to be someone that you are not. And,
right.
I mean, black folks have been always, we just see our hair everywhere. I mean, from locks to all types of braids and everything, hair expressions, you know, I love the hair shows because I love the competitions, the creativity that's created, and I feel that that is an expression of who we are, and it should always be welcome. And I'm so glad and so happy about the Crown Act because, you know, no one should be penalized because they have locks. I have locks. And, you know, because
but
I am a creative.
Can't they just keep their fingers out of our hair? I mean, my goodness. Leave
the hair
our
is
hair
very,
alone.
I know. The hair is
my
very powerful because it's your crown. Your crown is your loyalty, your heritage. And you know, this goes all the way back to, you know, slavery and
right.
them bringing us here and mm-hmm. and totally taking anything and everything away from us
Stripping.
That identifies who we are as a culture or race of people. I always say culture, you know, our culture. And mm-hmm. And they had to do that in order to control and you know, defame. But
right.
what's happening now is that that's not flying anymore. We're in a new era of acceptance and creativity and cultural. I think we're in a cultural revolution.
Exactly.
Where all the stuff that used to be is no more. We're not tolerating the way that things used to be. And it's a great change. It's a wonderful change. And
exactly.
that's why I keep my hair locks because I want people not to know, you know, I mean, afros, locks, I mean, japros. You can go to Japan, and what they call, they wear afros over there. They're called japros. Japros, like Japan afros.
Wow.
People follow our culture globally, from
exactly.
whether it's hair or what have you. And so why should we cut our hair when that's our power? I want little girls and little boys and people who are executives to know that, yes, you can be professional and wear your suit, your heels, or whatever, and your hair could be locks, it could be afro, it could be whatever. It's just an expression of who you are, which is you have to bring yourself into the room anyway.
Exactly, and I think, yeah. Peggy, you're absolutely right. It also seems that, to me, what folks who are not in this community just don't understand, and they don't care to understand it. They just want to, you know, I don't know what, I can't even make any sense of it, but the thing is, where there was a teenage boy and he was, you know, that wasn't even allowed to march in a graduation because of his hair and all this kind of crazy, it's so crazy and bizarre that
mm-hmm.
it just doesn't even make any sense. And the only thing I can kind of maybe say is that in these other communities, maybe their hair just doesn't mean anything to them. It's not that cultural deep resonance with them, and perhaps that's it. I don't know. But what I am here to say is that, and to reiterate what you said, and we cannot tolerate that going forward. This Crown Act, which is really creating a respectful and open world for natural hair, and that's really what this is about. And you have these states in New Jersey just being like the third in the nation at this time. I think there's a fourth. There are a few states where it's pending, and this is where they have passed these bills to not discriminate against folks, especially for natural hair, but, you know, using the hair as a way to separate and treat people in a derogatory fashion.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to keep an eye on it right here on the Hair Radio. We wouldn't be the Hair Radio Morning Show if we didn't, Miss Peggy Dodson. Mm-hmm. Now,
yeah,
speaking
yeah.
of little girls, and you mentioned this earlier, you know, just to even ask you, because you've been really doing some amazing things at UBC-TV and being a CEO, you already set an example for young women. But what can you tell us? Like, if you have to share advice, what advice would you share with young girls out there about being a CEO or whatever you think they can do?
Well, my advice is never give up on your dreams. You know, you dream something, and people have to understand that, you know, the head of Google and IBM and Microsoft, all those companies were created in someone's mind. And then they were created some in garages, Facebook. All these guys worked out of garages and small spaces. They didn't just pop up. And everything is a process. It doesn't go a straight line. it will go up and it will go down. And but you have to believe in your dreams, and you have to believe in yourself and never, ever give up. One of my mentors always told me, he says, never, ever give up. You don't ever give up, because that last swing of the bat that you decide not to swing could be the home run that you were looking, you know, to hit. And right. if you believe in something and you created it, that's what life is all about, creativity. You know, even,
absolutely.
You know, everything. Just don't give up on your dreams. You can be whatever you want to be. Don't allow anyone else to determine who you are. You determine who you are. That's between you and the Creator, the Most High. I've had people tell me so many discouraging things on my path. I've been on this path for a while, and as you know, Carrie, we're like we're like sister and brothers, you know.
We have,
you know,
been
we've been,
always yes.
You sometimes you have to make a way. You have to find a way, and you know because people actually.
And we lived in the
you.
Same house at some point, so
yes,
we really
I know,
are like
I know. We're like sisters and brothers.
We
know?
Really are,
And you never know how many people really have faith in you, and how many people are looking up to you. I mean, there's been times where I said, "Oh God, I got to give this up. I can't do this anymore." And you know, and someone like. A teenager would call and say, "Oh, Miss Dotson, you're such an inspiration to me. My God, I just want to."
Exactly.
And I said, "No, I can't. I've got to keep going."
And you pick yourself up and you roll on. That's
exactly,
right.
Exactly. Wow. But you know, you just have to
keep
at it.
Well, who are some of the folks, Peggy, who have influenced you? You are an influence to many other young women. But who are some of the folks who've made an impression on you?
My mother.
Wow.
My mother, she's at the top of the food chain. My mother was so amazing. She's in heaven now. And my dad, too. But my mom was just a powerhouse. She was an entrepreneur. She was a very spiritual being, mother of the church. She was a community activist. She was a healer. She was a negotiator. She was a financier. She was, and then she was my mother. And, you know, I have sisters and brothers, and she was mama. But she balanced all of those things, and she was just so smart. She could do anything. But if I could be, you know, a third of what my mom was, then I feel I'm a success because she was awesome. And, you know, I look at other women like Harriet Tubman. These are my role models. Harriet Tubman was just phenomenal. She was, if you don't know about Harriet Tubman, she was part of the CIA. Besides the Underground Railroad, she was, I don't know if they've told this story, but she was part of the CIA. She was a spy. And she helped recruit, people from the South to fight in the North, you know, because in the beginning, you know, the North is getting their butt kicked, and just a whole bunch of other things. She was fearless. She was very fearless. You know, Cicely Tyson, Aretha Franklin. These are the, you know, people. Billie Holiday. I go look at people from that era because those are the trailblazers that really kicked the doors in. And when they're at a time when, it was very hard on black women, you know, because it was very hard. We have it easier now, maybe harder in some senses, but, you know, we have it easier now. But the top of the food chain, my mom, my mother, she was just amazing. And she could sing, too. She was just amazing. And I love her to no end.
Well, it sounds like you mentioned about if you could just be a third of what your mother meant and how she still impressions and has made such a big impression on you and your family. I have to say, I think you've just nailed it and hit it out the park. I'm going to give you three thirds on that. I think that you, as you were describing all the wonderful gifts that your mother shared, I'm thinking to myself, I'm like, my goodness, Peggy's describing herself. that's what I got. And
yeah.
I just want to say, and
that's
I know
awful.
That, and I can say that, you know,
yeah.
you've been doing some amazing things. And for you guys out there who just tuned in, we've been having this awesome conversation. When Peggy comes to town, she brings it. And we're chatting today on the Hair Radio Morning Show. I wanted my first guest of this year to be Miss Peggy Dotson. She is the UBC TV CEO. And speaking of UBC TV, what are some of the programs that you guys are looking forward to bringing us?
Well, we've expanded our, oh, God, Carrie, we've just taken off and
yes.
expanded the whole programming grid with UBC. We are, I guess I could say that we are going into the connected TV realm this year, OTT. And if you don't know what that is, OTT is over the top, which is direct to consumer. And connected TV is sort of like the Rokus, where you have connected TV. You're not just watching broadcast or cable anymore. What's happening is that cable is it's ending because it's too expensive and cumbersome, and it has been a thorn in a lot of people of color's side who have wanted to get into the business of storytelling on a large scale, because the certain powers that be were holding people back. And they did not want us to get it because it's expensive. What I'm in is expensive as it is. But, you know, to have $500 million to get into the cable industry, you won't own your own company. And henceforth, you don't own your stories. You can't tell those stories because you have a whiteboard of directors or people who have no connection with anything but culture dictating to you what you must and cannot put on the air. So in the world that we have it now with streaming, which is taking off, I guess television did not think that it was going to take over this much, and it's taken off because now everything's going to digital streaming, as you know, Carrie.
Exactly.
And so now we are able to, the playing field now is level. I can compete with anyone else out there. It's all about content is king and queen. And once you have the content, you have to have the distribution. I've been very, very blessed. Like I said, you have to stay in this game and not give it up. I've been at the right place at the right time. I've been able to cut deals, direct deals with Roku and Amazon Prime. We're going on Fire Stick. We're going on Android TV. We're doing a deal with Hulu. And I have a deal with Verizon right now, which gives me the ability to go international, linear. All the cable stations are going to digital cable. So we will also have our own, as you do with your hair radio show in your salon, which I'm sure we'll talk about, to be able to get into homes. Traditional TV is dying, has died.
Yes.
It has already died because people
right.
just don't want to, they can't sit in front of a cable channel, and people don't want to see the commercials. They don't pertain to them. I mean, I don't want to see a commercial about Geritol. I don't need Geritol.
Not
you know,
yet.
I'm
we don't we don't need it quite yet.
I'm never going to need it.
Exactly.
I have my herbal compounds. And so, you know, it's just that we don't need that type of those type of commercials. So
exactly.
What digital technology does, it gives us the opportunity to identify who's watching, when they're watching, how much they're watching, and a whole bunch of other stuff. You have artificial intelligence and all of those kind of
AI.
Things coming into play, which is a two-edged sword, but it can be used for good in order to show people the right commercials and things that they want to see pertaining to their own lifestyle. And that's what's so great about that.
Well, I love what you said. Yes, because I remember when streaming kind of started. Streaming had a slow start. At first, there was a little bit of a – there was a separation between broadcast and streaming, and the streamers
mm-hmm. –
you know, it was almost like a stepbrother kind of thing for if you were streaming content. streaming was not, and when I, just as a consumer, not even talking about it in a broadcasting level, I couldn't even, I was like, well, this sounds just the same as a song I just played digital, so I thought it was okay. I couldn't understand why the folks would look down at streaming at that time. So, you know, and as you have so eloquently put it, times have really changed, and the streaming has really taken, you know, front and center. And so
well,
I'm really
proud. Because
now it's
broadcast quality. Yeah, everything now is HD and 4K, and it's broadcast. Now the video has caught up with, because before it was like spinning and lagging and things like that. I mean,
exactly.
People like Verizon live stream the Super Bowl, and you get a live broadcast. You get broadcast HD quality, same as it goes all across the board. Because what is happening now is that content is about content and the different screens. You may want to see it on your mobile. You want to maybe see it on your tablet. You may want to connect the TV, which is like Roku, which is what we're going on. And you know, you may want to see it on screen.
Always,
yeah.
We're always so much right there together.
Yeah,
I'm going to save our big thing for we'll tell you about it the next time we get together. And I'm going to fill in Miss Peggy right after this call. I'm loving this today and having this wonderful conversation. But you know what, Peggy, I have to also say, one of the biggest things, the other big D in the room, of course, digital is critical and important. The other big D is demand and being able to have, like you said, that control over what you watch and not just sit there and let folks just give you and tell you, but you get to make that decision. So how does UBC TV feel about that, giving people that power?
Well, I feel great about giving the people the power. I mean, we have an iOS app coming out, and I want people to be able to get all content on as many platforms as possible. It's called TV Everywhere, and that started some time ago. And I was always embraced, you know, like you said, I was always, you know, I'm not tooting my horn, but I was one of the first three African Americans that was recognized in technology back in 2001. I was on the cover of Black Enterprise with two other sisters, and the story was Weathering the Storm, and we were three African-American women in technology. And because then I always felt that technology and media could marry each other. And once they marry, then you have something special, because then the technology then can, media can then, the stories can be told over different platforms and in ways that people want them, and then you could begin to monetize. Now a lot of the commercial ad inventory now is coming onto digital, you know, because, you know, companies want to get a ROI, better ROI, which is return on investment, for the money that they're spending on advertising dollars, which means they want to reach that coveted demographic, whether it's the ex-gen or the kids or African-Americans or Latinas or whom have you. But we over-index African-Americans, particularly black women, we over-index in video. So, and we make all the decisions. So a lot of the content and commercials really today are made for women, because women make the decisions in the household. We make decisions for the men. The men are out working. Some women are out working too, but both women still make the decision whether they're working or not, because they take care of the children. And So it has a lot to do with that.
Exactly. And the marketing folks out there have long known that they always target women with whatever it is that they're trying to push on the folks out there. But I have to say, Peggy, this is just the tip of the iceberg. And it's nice to see that, you know, that folks are kind of thrusting forward and making a little bit more inclusion and, you know, inclusivity out there. Because that's what forces these folks to change in these corporations, as they see the dollars. And they know we make the dollars. Maybe they're not aware that we know that they know that we know. You know,
we're the 10th largest economy in the world with the buying power.
That's right.
So, I mean, I think it's higher than that. I think it's eight. It's the eighth largest economy. Now, these are I'm saying African Americans. I'm not saying any other. I'm just saying, and then, you know, the Latinos follow us. And then, so you mean you have the fifth largest economy in the world, or here, You know, so what I was saying about UBC in reference to content, you know, my goal is to create lifestyle content. Lifestyle content helps, it has legs, and it helps us to appeal to a wider demographic, all people, because when you talk about lifestyle, I've always wanted to have a channel that has, you know, could tell different stories. You know, for instance, we have a new show called City Vines that we're rolling out. City Vines is our food and wine show, and it's about new restaurants, and we've been filming that. And one of the things I wanted to do was also to teach people of color about wine, because we consume, when you look at the numbers, we consume 83% of all liquors, African Americans. So, you know, now we're becoming more interested in wine, because wine has been around since the beginning of time, and wine is also very good for you. So wine pairings and things of that nature, new restaurants, and then we have an auto show that talks about autos. We have a show called Urban Access, which is like urban red carpets and things like that. We have a Style and Beauty Cafe, which is all about fashion, new designers and all that kind of stuff, and what's happening in the beauty world. And that's where you and I, we're going to make an announcement, I know, soon.
Absolutely.
Are partnering together to do something very, very exciting.
Absolutely.
And we have I have a cannabis channel, which is all about the world of cannabis and hemp, because that is something that people need to know about from a business standpoint. I have sports, which is my namesake. I love sports, and you know, I've done that for national TV, produced that, and we're delving into news. So we're delving into news because we need a more balanced voice. I'm tired of seeing the same old people doing the same old things, saying the same old opinions. And they're not talking to us or any people
exactly.
of color. And we need to get a real voice out here. And we have our music stuff, you know, UBC Jams, and which is our small concert type stuff. We have going to be doing some new shows we have coming out, and you'll hear about those. But I'm really excited about the two things. Is our new shopping platform that we're rolling out called the Urban Home Shopping Network, and it is something like an urban QVC. It's a platform, but we're also going to be putting together a TV show that will feature all types of products and services for small businesses and entrepreneurs who can't get on the larger platforms and things like that. And so I'm very excited about that. And we have one of our big shows is called the UBC Mixed Dance Show, which is my show that I created. It is the evolution of Soul Train. We're adding DJs, and we're having poppers and breakdancers and stuff. We have some auditions coming up this spring. If we can get past being under quarantine, which is really scary right now. So hopefully we've been filming since last year, so we have a lot of new stuff coming up. And we're getting ready to make our debut, a national debut on Roku. And we have subscribers, and people who want to subscribe, they can go. It's a free subscription. We're not charging. So at the moment we're not. So we can become a member of UBC TV Network family and watch our content and all the kind of stuff we have. We have a lot of stuff coming up, Carrie. A lot of exciting things.
It sounds like it. And we are so excited for you at the Hit Radio Morning Show and the Salon TV Network. Now, I've got to ask you, so folks who want to visit your website, is there a website where they can get all this wonderful information and find out more about UBC TV?
Yes. You can go to www.ubctvnetwork.com, and you can go there and you can actually sign up for free to your free membership subscribership to UBC TV. And once we launch the mobile app, that same sign in will get you into the UBC experience. So we will have premium content, live content, sports, pay-per-view, everything. And we're also adding podcasts. We have a whole lineup coming. in addition to the radio, our radio
wow.
show,
yes.
where people will be able to hear your show on our
yes.
platform as well, and vice versa. Like our, I mean, everybody listen. Carrie is awesome, and he's just wonderful, and he's so just. I have to toot your horn because you're just really just so awesome, and we've kind of like had this parallel kind of.
Yes, we have, and I have to say. First of all, I want to thank Ms. Peggy Dotson. Whenever we do any of these things, and the first person I'm thinking about who can add really something that's meaningful, so that our listeners and our viewers and folks out there, you guys actually tuning in right now, who can add something to the conversation? And your name is always the first that pops up. Ms. Peggy Dotson. I can just say nothing but amazing things. You've just done some just award-winning things at UBC-TV. We're going to be following you very closely right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. We will be doing a whole bunch of partnerships. We have some wonderful events that we're going to talk about with Hair Nation Expo. We'll get to that in some.
Well, it's that time to bring this episode of the Hair Radio Morning Show to a close. But it does not end here. The show continues over at our 24/7 Hair Radio broadcast network at www.hairradio.com. Now, I must thank today's great guests and our legacy advertisers. These are the folks who've been supporting our show over the years, including Dr. Raglan, Yolanda Raglan at fixyourfeet.com. They are the very best in foot care. She has two locations, one in New York City and the other in Maryland. I also want to take a moment to acknowledge the amazing Troy Ballard, of course, from the West Coast out in Southern California. His company is called Smooth Black Ink. Now, he offers the very, very best in hair care for the entire family. He is a legendary hairstylist and educator. And also, he's a program host right here on the Hair Radio Morning Show. We just appreciate him again. That's Troy Ballard, a.k.a. Smooth Black of Smooth Black Ink. Also, we are talking about a complete line of products for the guys now. It's at Rugged Evolution. Now, Rugged Evolution Beard Care is the actual name of the company. Rugged Evolution Beard Care makes a complete line. I love their products. Go to www.ruggedevo.com for more details. Again, that's ruggedevo, that's EVO.com for complete details on their products. Also, stimulatingroots.com. Now, Stimulating Roots is a hair product growth system for women, for everybody, really. And how they spell it, I love this, it's R-U-T-Z. Get amazing hair products that supports healthy hair. And I say the secret is in their name, Stimulating Roots. That's really it. That's what actually grows the hair. Now, we're also taking a moment. Go to their site, stimulatingroots.com. Again, it's spelled R-U-T-Z is how they spell roots.com. Now, we're also thanking our entire advertising and promotions family for introducing our show fans to their great products and services. And you will find many of them right here in our website store at www.hairadio.com. That's hairradio.com, spelled with just one R. Now, it's also been our honor to welcome our amazing Hair Radio Morning Show fans from coast to coast in the United States and North America, to continents all around the world. Our many friends and family, folks over in Ghana, South Africa, Nigeria, Egypt, and our folks across the diaspora of Africa, of course. Now, we're also thanking our big fan base in Europe, folks over in Italy, Spain, France, England, and really all over there, to folks back here, right here in America, folks who join me from all different time zones. I broadcast from right here in Brooklyn, New York, The show is live from 6 in the morning to 9 Eastern. Again, that's Monday through Friday. So we're on the East Coast, and we're reaching folks who tune in from the Central Time Zone, from out in the West Coast Time Zone, and we are just honored, and we thank you. From New York to L.A. and from, you know, from Boston to Miami, Florida. So we just love you guys. Whether you're in Texas, Chicago, wherever you are, you can tune into this broadcast. And again, we thank all of our amazing fans. And to the islands, we haven't forgotten about you folks. We thank you. We welcome you. We appreciate your participation in our broadcast. Now, it's been my honor to pay tribute to some of our amazing guests also who join me right here for live interviews, including the biggest story in the whole country was all about Tessica Brown and the Gorilla Glue. Well, we had the very doctor, the miracle doctor, Dr. Ovang, right here on our show all the way from Beverly Hills, California. He told us all about the incident. Also, I had a chance to chat with Beyonce's dad, Mr. Matthew Knowles. Madam C.J. Walker's great-great-granddaughter, Lilia Bundles, was on with us. Also, and that was before she was on the Netflix show. I also wanted to mention, or before she created that, the book sponsored her show on Self-Made on Netflix. You guys know what I'm talking about. And from the famous Bronner Brothers family, we had one of the Bronner Brothers on. Bernard Bronner was my very special guest recently as well. Now, I had a chance to interview many, many folks from the world of music as well, of course, like Grammy winners Dionne Warwick, Gerald Austin from the Manhattans, to Broadway Tony Award-winning legends like the one and only music icon as well, Miss Melba Moore, to singers like Cece Tennyson, Allison Williams, Tony Terry, Lenny Williams, to other hair industry superstars like Kim Berry. You guys know she was the hairstylist to super legendary singer Prince for about 29 years. So we take music seriously on our daily broadcast, and we play some of your favorite songs, or mine, as well, right here on our show. And each show, we kind of use that to kind of encase each broadcast. Now, also remember to visit our website. We've got two. One is hairradio.com. That's spelled HAIradio.com with one R. So there you can shop. We have a big website store. But more importantly, we have our 24-hour, 7 days a week radio network there where you can click the play button and listen 24 hours a day, all the time. We feature original hair and beauty content, new radio shows, music, classic broadcasts, so much more. Please visit hairradio.com for that. Then our second website is our event website. Now, we put all of our event information right there. It's called hairnationexpo.biz. So let me just say that again. It's